It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this ninth day of August 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And thus it is that we start the second full broadcast week of August. And there will be two more broadcasting weeks in August. Wait, do I have that right? So easily confused by modern things like calendars. Yes, we'll have two more broadcast weeks in August, and then I disappear for a few days, and, there is some trepidation that attends that, something about going and being in a place where people don't have the common decent sense to go and get a vaccine, but, oh well, we'll talk about that, later, but anyway, hi, I'm Robin, and it is Moran Monday on the Horn, and lo, there are many Morans, oh my God, so many, many Morans, and as a consequence, we will have much Moran Monday to go into. And of course, if you'd like to augment your live listening experience, not so much during the podcast, because, well, you get the idea, but during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, well, you can become part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room. And if you pop in there now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky and Stockton Larry, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, would rather not run the risk of folding space into the Dixie Fire, which has now become the second largest wildfire, I think, in California history. Gosh, just last week it was only like the seventh or something, but it remains only 21% contained. Good God. There is the goddess of irony is at work, however. I mean, there's nothing to laugh about in the Dixie Fire whatsoever. But the goddess of irony does remain on the job because, well, Dixie is burning. You know, just like in 1864 and 1865, you know. Of course, that was different then. That was a matter of having to burn some sense into some traitors, but, oh well, never mind. As William Tecumseh Sherman noted, war is hell. Because, well, some people have a hard time learning. And that was the case. Never mind. We'll skip the history portion of the program for at least for now. Yes. And every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and consequently, we have thanks to send out to our 7th, 8th, and 9th day of the month subscribers. And that means over the weekend we have thanks to send out to our partial sponsors. That would be, let's see here. Thank you very kindly to James. Thank you. And thanks as well to David in San Diego. Thank you so much, David. And thanks as well to Dwayne. And to Susan, up in the Great Northwest. Thank you, Susan. Thank you to Marcia. Thank you to Brendan. Thank you to Nancy. Thanks so very much to Khalil. and to Ralphs and to James. And thank you to Marybelle and Cecilia jumping in this evening. Thanks for all, to all of you who, along with our merry little band of a la carte contributors and Patreon subscribers, thank you. You all are the reason this program continues to exist, and the gratitude of the entire community goes to you, and especially from me and this little family here. It's a mite toasty here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. So, naturally, it's a lovely day for naked radio, but we'll try not to make too much of a mention of that, so dinner will not be ruined in any of the time zones. No. But it might get a little toasty. Yeah, 84 degrees in the studio. Whew. Yeah, we're finally having some warm weather now that August has finally started. Yeah. Let's see. More in Monday. Where to begin? Lots of potential places, but a couple of emails just to get us started, because that's how, you know, people have a lot of things that they want to share over the course of as the weekend passes by. Today is Happy BBTD Day. You know what that is? 47 years ago today, on August the 9th, 1974, we waved BB, bye-bye, to TD, Tricky Dick, Nixon. Mm-hmm. Then, consequently, as Scott in San Diego describes it, it is BBTD Day. Yeah. Well, I don't know why the head on what.life website says August the 6th, but it does, so I'm sure that Brother Deacon Asa will get around to correcting that at some point. Got a Delta variant update, courtesy of Steve in New York. I just spoke with the second person I know who contracted the Delta post-vaccination. He most definitely had symptoms. He was exhausted for 2 to 3 days and had issues with scent, smelling phantom scents while having it. No, he didn't have to go to the hospital. And it was milder than normal, but this is very ominous because the more it circulates, the more likely it will evolve into a variant where it will laugh at the vaccine. Yes, pardon the nick-ups. Still, take no chances. Use every one of your frontline defenses. God knows I will be. I already am. I don't go into any public accommodation without a mask on. And sometimes I go back and forth, sometimes an N95 and sometimes the N99 with the straps behind the head, and it look like some sort of ninja, which is cool. But it's out there, and I know a couple of people who have had it post-vaccination. And then, but the difference between having it post-vaccination and having it no vaccination is post-vaccination, most people, the vast majority of people who have it post-vaccination, don't die. The same cannot be said of people who have it no vaccination. And so, I wanted to, like I said, thank you. Thanks, Cecilia and David, for jumping in. Fundraising-wise, that gets us down to, like $610, because we still had a deficit from last week, but we're at $610 and to come up even with fundraising. So we'll see how that plays out. Let's see here. Okay. Oh, and, so, subject line, Jeffrey's first ball game. Joey writes, So my wife thought she had me last Friday night, but I, with the help of Jeffrey's lofty thinking, managed to out-negotiate her. She knows I love baseball and said that she had Loge tickets to the Akron Rubber Ducks baseball game with fireworks following the game. She knows that I would never turn down a professional baseball game, but this game came with some strings attached. I really like basketball because there are always strings attached when you watch one of those games. It seems like the basketball games are always up for grabs even late in the game. Speaking of strings attached, Joey adorned me with a dozen or so little rubber ducks, which he strung around my neck, which made up a neat little necklace, and the kids loved it. My wife informed me that most of her siblings would be attending the game as well. So she said that if I wanted to go to the game, I had to be respectful of her silly sisters and their idiot husbands. She thought she had me. Not so fast. That's when I decided to play the Jeffrey card, and I told her that if I had to hang out around her family, she was bringing Jeffrey to the game with me. Oh, she didn't like that, but so sad, too bad. Jeffrey had a ticket, and he was going to the game. My wife then asked me, why do you carry that stuffed giraffe around with you, and then you talk to him and pretend that he's real? Well, it's funny, honey, I then said to her. You go to church every Sunday and worship an inanimate object that's not real, the baby Jesus, so why do you criticize me for hanging out with a stuffed giraffe? And my wife responds, you know, Jesus will not bless you if you don't stop making fun of him. I responded, don't worry, he's blessed me with you. What more could I want? Hell, at least Jeffrey shows up once in a while. When's the baby Jesus going to ever show up? Damn, Joey. I mean, you're the cover to a Molly Hatchet album. Flirting with disaster. Anyways, I told one of my sister-in-law's ignorant friends to get the hell away from me because she was not vaccinated. She said that she was not sure about getting vaccinated because the vaccine was not approved by the FDA. Oh, for sake. Joey says, I told her, yeah, and you may not be approved by a medical center once the COVID-19 ravages you and you're near death, just like Cindy's sister Polly, who nearly died when she contracted COVID last winter. This idiot named Roberta claims she had done her research and she was not so sure about a vaccine that was so new and not approved. Well, this didn't play well with Giraffrey. Hey, lady, you moron, this is not a new vaccine. This vaccine is part of my mRNA family and has been around for decades. You obviously haven't researched anything. Oh, good shot, Jeffrey. Shot. Yeah, little. Yeah, tiny little jingle. Then Polly's husband. Oh, this had to be a fantastic night. Cracker Jack claimed that all these illegals are crossing the border without vaccinations. No, dumbass, I hasten to add, Biden, just like Obama, shipped plenty of illegals right back over the border if they were not part of the DACA program, and currently the Biden administration is only allowing those who are vaccinated to be even considered for a stay in this country, you know, the ones who are, wait for it, yes, only the ones who are a Biden and getting the vaccine will be considered eligible for citizenship. A Biden. Oh, the llama is weary. Jeffrey really enjoyed the games as the Rubber Ducks won both games with a walk-off win in the first game with two very high fly balls that cleared the right field fence to win the second game 2-0. And Jeffrey with a long shot of his own. So, sorry, Bill in Altoona Town, but the Rubber Ducks pitchers know how to toe the rubber and hit with ducks on the pond. Jeffrey, that's Bill in Allentown, not Altoona Town. Why do you confuse me? On the lighter side, when I dressed Jeffrey up with the rubber duck necklaces, I had no idea that four young children would be at the game. How wonderful it was to have those little rubber ducks that I could easily so easily remove from his neck and give to the kids. That made the whole night. The children loved Jeffrey and the necklaces that each one of them received. Even my wife had to admit that both Jeffrey and the children made the evening so wonderful. Well, you know, Jeffrey will never steal a base, but as usual, he stole the show Friday night. This has been Joey's Journal for Morion Monday, the 9th day of August, with Giraffrey trying to make a pitch to all the unvaccinated so he can strike out the COVID. Someday soon, and there's a $10 strike out the COVID challenge on the table. That's great, and that would get us down under the $600 mark, which would be wonderful. So thank you, Joey. Thank you, Giraffrey. Mm-hmm. Drinks on the house, says Silent R. Lamar the Magnificent. I got the second COVID shot today. Oh shit! I knew there was something I forgot. I forgot to get ladders to get the roof for the drinks, because that's where the drinks are, on the house. Yeah, it's kind of like the operating philosophy of being a Frisbeterian. You know, we believe when you die, your soul goes up on the roof and you can't get it down. Yeah. Giraffe's first baseball game? I can't believe, says Billable Rick, that Giraffe hadn't been to a ball game before, as Joey takes that stuffed giraffe with him everywhere, even to campaign rallies, as Bernie muttered to an aide, "What kind of guy brings a giraffe with him to a campaign rally?" And, you know, the obvious answer is, you know, a guy who doesn't have an aardvark, right? Give Joey a cowbell for his comparison contrast of Giraffe and the baby Jesus. Yeah, I think so. Yep. Sweet, fake baby Jesus. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, illiberal democracy, what the fuck? This comes from Ron in Raleigh. When fascism comes to America, it will be wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross. This quote is usually attributed, and I always get it wrong. No matter which person I name, I always get it wrong. Ron in Raleigh says, this quote is usually attributed to Sinclair Lewis. It was actually James Waterman Wise. I'd like to paraphrase, when fascism comes to America, it will be wrapped in the flag and hosting a primetime Fox News show. Last week, Tucker Carlson spent the week in Hungary, praising that country's authoritarian leader, Viktor Orban. Viktor! Orban's takeover of every governmental media and judicial organization to push his agenda. He calls this illiberal democracy, which is the furthest thing from democracy that there can be. This is a racist, xenophobic, homophobic system that Orban imposed without firing a shot. What Orban is doing in Hungary, which is establish a white ethno-state, is what Tucker Carlson and the rest of his filthy ilk want to do in America. Look around the world and you'll see similar systems being imposed. In the U.S., look at all the new voter suppression laws being passed, banning the teaching of factual history using the phony debate about CRT as a wedge issue. This activity is part and parcel of the fascist playbook. Unless the population pulls its reactionary head out of its ass, we will be goose-stepping and throwing up a stiff-arm salute, Sieg Heil, to our Führer, Tucker Carlson. Mm-hmm. Well said. Well said, Ron and Raleigh. You know, I can remember, I am so old. I can remember when Republicans got all butt hurt and they burned CDs and albums and whatevers of, you know, they probably, you know, they probably burned the computers that had their MP3s of the Dixie Chicks on them. Remember, the Dixie Chicks were on a world tour and they were a big deal. Now they're just the Chicks. They took the Dixie out of it. Because good, and I think it was in the UK, was it not, where the Dixie Chicks had the temerity to say that they were embarrassed that George W. Bush, then the illegitimate occupant of the White House by operation of a constitutional anachronism from our vicious enslaving past, they were embarrassed that George W. Bush was from Texas. Hoo-wee! Oh, my goodness. The outrage machine pegged. The meter absolutely pegged way over to the right in the red on the Fox News outrage-o-meter. And there were literally Dixie Chicks record burnings And they were, their lives were threatened for daring to criticize George W. Bush, who, of course, deserved every iota of criticism that came his way. Oh, my goodness, the outrage was palpable. And they said things like, oh, well, you know, politics stops at the water's edge. Oh, faw, 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 harumph. I didn't get a harumph out of that guy about politics stopping at the water's edge. Yeah. Of course, there were many of us who agreed with the Chicks that George W. Bush was a walking embarrassment. But never mind. Flash forward to 2021, and their own leader of the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda's own leader of the white nationalist movement. It was indeed, he did indeed, the check cleared, take money to go over to Hungary and praise a white supremacist, white nationalist, inarguably fascist-oriented authoritarian, Viktor Orban, for doing fascist authoritarian politics in his takeover of the Hungarian government. He came to office on a populist wave, and then he got down to business doing exactly what it was that fascists do. And Cucky Tucky was more than happy to take the money and go over and shill, and politics did not stop at the water's edge. And he actually said that the Hungarians do democracy better than the new 90 states of Merca, the greatest country in the history of the earth, and now forever under God in the universe today. What's that, MP3s with the Dixie Chicks? I'm going out on a limb here and say MP3s are way too advanced for the dimwits that are up in arms from the Dixie Chicks speaking truth. That's Steve in New York. I'm thinking they were burning their cassettes and breaking their Walkmans, or would that be Walkman? I don't think the grammarians ever actually sorted that out. Ah, well, okay, there's the explanation. Brother Deacon Asa explaining. It's the Muslim's fault. The fascists in Hungary have to fascist because too many Muslims. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Hungary is just part of a fascist wave that is and has been sweeping Europe. I had a story, a couple of weeks back. I don't know if it stayed in the stack or not. One story that I had talking about the new hijab rules, it was appealed from France to the EU High Court, and the EU High Court upheld France's hijab ban. I mean, that's the very, very simplest way to describe it, but that's what happened, and it's being derided in Europe as viciously anti-immigrant and viciously anti-religious freedom. And a hijab is just a headscarf. It seems, and when you consider the history of Europe, I mean, not so much now, but certainly throughout the last 1,700 years or so, the number of women walking around in headscarves and full black robe, you know, flapping and fussing like penguins. I'm talking about nuns. Somehow it's, gee, what's the difference? I mean, I am deeply opposed to organized religion, and I will always be. And I don't have much regard for any faith that says that you've got to wear a silly hat or wrap something around you in a particular fashion or go and jingle something or shriek something or bow to something or grunt and groan about something or slap yourself with a flail or no. Any deity that wants a person to do that is probably imaginary. I would say almost 99.99999% certainly imaginary. And the covering, you know, anybody who, and this is not Prayer Meeting Wednesday, don't worry, but, you know, anybody who cites religion as a reason for a woman to have to cover or be ashamed of some part of her body, can go get stuffed as far as I'm concerned. And this isn't something that just occurred to me with my transition. I've always held this to be the case. Because it's in the Torah, it's in the New Testament, it's in the Quran. I suspect it can probably be found in various holy books of various sects all around the planet. The women got to cover up their lovely locks because otherwise the men folk will get so distracted that they won't be able to focus on how awesome it is to be men folks and spend all their time mumbling at God. God mumbling. Yeah, it's a thing. So, Viktor Orban asks Steve in New York, what's your problem? That's no different than when Jimmy Carter went to the Soviet Union and hung out with Leonid Brezhnev and extolled the virtues of the Soviet Union in Red Square from that reviewing balcony we always saw during the May Day parades. Not quite. Nice little authoritarian regime you got here, sure. I also remember when Jimmy Carter visited what was then Yugoslavia during the reign of Marshal Tito. And they said, listen, you're here like everybody else. You get 3 minutes of hot water in the shower, and then it turns cold, and you're out of luck. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Ron and Raleigh is as far as the French hijab ban. Does that mean I couldn't wear a do-rag? How else will I keep my do in shape? I'm a fop man. Well, I'm a dapper. I used to be a Dapper Dan man. And I don't like fop. All you got's fop. Yeah. Nice reference. Nice reference, Ron. Yeah. You mean, asks Randy Radar, this frat boy, Tucker Carlson, got surreptitious vaccinated onto a closed environment plane across the Atlantic Ocean to a fascist country, and the unvaxxed Emery and Marvelline cheered him on? You damn Skippy, they did. Not that he's going to tell the rubes or anything, but, right, yeah. See, it's nice and white. All they're trying to do is have a nice white country over there in Hungary. And, Lee in New York points out, those subject line, Dixie Chick, those people who hated what the chicks said are the same people with Biden signs because the Dixie Chick's words were too extreme. Right. Yeah, and fuck your feelings. They probably got one of those, too. You are a prophet, Steve in New York reminds us. With little Tucky, it all boils down to this. I-O-K, I-Y-A-R, and then A-M-E-N. Mm-hmm. Now, congratulations to Steve in New York, by the way. It took a while. Just like it took a while to get Scott in San Diego to watch The Big Lebowski. Well, I'm proud to say that Steve in New York informed me that he has now viewed Idiocracy, the Mike Judge film, and everything has become so much clearer for him. Yeah. Brought to you by Carl's Jr., Steve. Brought to you by Carl's Jr. And remember, Brondo, it has electrolytes. It's what plants crave. Yes. It, too, and I was reminded to mention that because that, too, is very much a matter of prophecy. All things being equal, though, this is, of course, well, more in Monday.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, just steps away from the carnival midway where only moments ago you were throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls. The golf balls would have broken the goldfish bowls. And in a vain hope of taking home a precious little baby iguana, this is it. The Moran Monday tent Moran Monday on the Horn. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. But right here, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, we've got them all. Birchers, deathers, booger eaters, maggots, trumpanzees, libertarians. Yes, indeed. Every kind of right-wing Moran under the sun. Even some stealth Morans who try to pretend that they're Democrats. They're all right here, waiting to thrill you, to shock you, to amaze you, to nauseate you. Behind the flaps of the Moran Monday tent. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. For, less than the cost of a half a stick of chewing gum per program for a $10 a month subscriber, it's all right there and waiting for you. My goodness gracious sakes alive, how wonderful, wonderful it is, as long as you, do what we always advise, and that is keep a close hand on and a close eye on watches, jewelry, necklaces, bracelets, bangles, toe rings, anything that the Morans can get their hands on, including that precious little iguana, or maybe your little purse chihuahua, or European-style messenger bags, purses, backpacks, because being right-wing, they can get grabby, yes. Head for the hills. You'll be up to your armpits in Morans. My words are tripping over themselves. Thank you, Ralph. Thank you very kindly. And so, consequently, this being Moran Monday, I said some of them masquerade as Democrats. Well, that was kind of on purpose, because over at the Hill, a clown by the name of Tim Hulskamp, Hulskamp, Hulskamp. Or Huell Scamp, you little scamp, a senior political advisor to Catholic Vote and former congressman for Kansas's 1st District. Yeah, he's a real God mumbler, a sure on deity botherer, Bible thumper. Mm-hmm. And The Hill let him publish an opinion piece there in which he noted that Joe Manchin. I mean, it's Moran Monday. You didn't expect us to get away without a Joe Manchin reference on a Moran Monday, did you? Tim Hulskamp Sorry, that's so sophomoric, but, sometimes it's in the moment and it's in the situation. He's just a hoping that Joe Manchin will preserve what he refers to as the, and this is the Moran part of the nomination, life-saving Hyde Amendment in the budget reconciliation process. Mm-hmm. Writing at the Hill, Tim Hulskamp says, if pro-abortion Democrat senators succeed in first passing the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill, they then intend to use $3.5 trillion budget bill to unlock billions in federal taxpayer dollars for abortion by radically transforming Medicaid. And using the budget reconciliation process, Senate Democrats could do this without a single Republican vote. That makes Joe Manchin's vote and his clear public promises singularly critical to preserve the Hyde family of amendments. Oh, now it's not just the Hyde Amendment, it's the Hyde family? Yeah, we remember Congressman Hyde, don't we? I seem to recall there was some money changed. Not exactly pure as the driven slush was representing Hyde, Henry Hyde. But his name is forever appended to the notion that we can't be having American taxpayer dollars making sure that women, poor women, go and get an abortion with federal dollars instead of roto-rooter and up around in there with a rusty coat hanger. Yeah. Henry Hyde made a name for himself back during the great Clinton cleanest hunt. And every time he got a chance to holler about the marital infidelities of William Jefferson Clinton, there's only one problem. Henry Hyde had a few secrets of his own. Yeah. Described by David Moberg back in 1999 at Salon as a tall, pear-shaped 13-term congressman from the wealthy and conservative western suburbs of Chicago. He was known for defending family values and doing the bidding of the Pope at Rome in terms of trying to make sure that women could not control the workings of their own reproductive organs and could not access Medicare or Medicaid funds really to pay for one. It turned out that he had spent a lot of years, lots and lots of years, doing with a as a family values Republican, a romping along with a very much younger woman who was not his family values one man and one woman spouse. Yeah. But regardless of that, his name is still attached to the Hyde Amendment that torments poor women and makes it less likely that they'll be able to get the reproductive health care that they need. So Tim Heuskamp says that, help us, Joe Manchin III. Only, you're our own, you're the precious little fetus's only hope. Yeah. Now Tim Heuskamp makes sure to blame this ditching of the Hyde Amendment on Senator Reverend Raphael Warnock's legislation that expands Medicaid, but leaves the Hyde Amendment in the dustbin of history where it belongs. My God, how long has it been on the books? How many women of impecunious circumstances have been harmed, have been hurt by the Hyde Amendment? And see, the neat thing is, the Warnock Medicaid bill, it provides a premium-free health care coverage to low-income citizens. Heuskamp calls them residents. Residents, citizens. And Heuskamp claims that there have been oodles and oodles of polls that show that Americans don't support using government money, taxpayer dollars, to pay for abortions. Anyway, and then, because he's a moron, he said, and these are his words, "For over 40 years, the Hyde Amendment has saved lives. It has been estimated that approximately 2.4 million more abortions would have occurred without this legislative provisions. Once upon a time, this issue united Democrats and Republicans." No, it didn't. It united conservative Democrats and conservative Republicans. Yes. Oh, this guy's... what an obnoxious moron. And, then there's the... But this moron may have a point, because back when he was just a... little pissant member of the West Virginia legislature, Joe Manchin went to every West Virginians for Life bean dinner, spaghetti dinner, ramp dinner that came along. And he'd always be willing to stand up and talk about how much he loved the precious little fetuses. Yeah. And so this Hills Camp jackass has the nerve to say that Biden, Warnock, and their allies in the Senate would like to hijack the infrastructure and reconciliation bills to advance their extreme pro-abortion agenda. How about we change that for you a little bit, Tim, you uterus-free prick? It's not extreme, it is simply a pro-woman agenda. A pro-women's constitutional rights agenda. Joe Manchin may well be the one man who can stop what could be the largest expansion of federal abortion funding in American history. My daddy plays dominoes better than your daddy's plays dominoes. Already abandoned by President Biden, faithful Catholics and pro-life Americans across the country pray that Manchin keeps his word and stands strong in the breach. Yeah, that's another thing that abortions can prevent is breech births. You know, where mother and baby both may very well die. Oh, the goddess of irony has Tim Hillskamp right in the palm of her hand. And if she wants to tweak his little pink tomato nose, that is entirely her business. Yeah, faithful Catholics. Notice the way this is phrased. Already abandoned by President Biden. Faithful Catholics, yada yada. So, I guess... if one is Catholic and supports the idea that government policy should not be driven by religious demands, that makes one a faithless Catholic. It doesn't matter how often or how much you believe that the magic cracker turns into Jesus meat in your little tum-tum and the little swig of Mogan David turns into Jesus blood in your little tum-tum. You're still a faithless Catholic if you don't want to lock, you get big government into those little tiny uteruses. Asshole. Jerk. Theocrat. Because in the final analysis, that's what Tim Hillskamp is. And all of these pro-life Americans. Theocrats. They want to take their religious views, which they're welcome to have, just like the religious views, in, say, of a Muslim woman in France says that, you know, God will hate her if she doesn't cover up her filthy, sinful hair. She's welcome to that religious view. It should be welcomed. But then again, and here's the difference, Muslim women in France don't want to force every other woman in France to cover up their filthy, sinful hair. Right. On the other hand, Tim Hillskamp, he's not that liberal. He wants every woman in America to have to adhere to the teachings of the Pope at Rome. And that's a term of art, by the way, the Pope at Rome. He wants every, and you know, condoms too, I guess. Can't have no Medicaid money being used to buy no rubbers. Or slut pills. Wasn't that what fat, dead Rush Limbaugh called it? My friends, Sandra Fluck wants to make the government pay, make insurance companies pay for her slut medicine. I wish I was kidding. But of course I'm not. Down in perdition, you know. Well, hey Rush, what did you say about that woman who wanted contraception to be covered by insurance? Tell us again, Rush. Be honest about it, or we'll find the pineapple with the extra points. I called her a slut. That's right. Whoop. My friends, it still stings. By the way, Steve reminds us with regard to Henry Hyde. Recall that what he did, those things were just youthful indiscretions. You know, when he was a youthful 41 years old, you know, Republicans and their youthful indiscretions. I'm not, again, not delving too deeply into history, but I remember when going AWOL, as W did, was a youthful indiscretion, or driving the family truckster through the plate glass window of their living room when he was lit out of his brains. That was a youthful indiscretion. Youth lasts a long time when you're a Republican. Yeah. You know, toe-tapping in the basement restroom of the Minneapolis St. Paul International Airport, right? Youthful indiscretion, even though the dude was, you know, not exactly youthful. And, well, right. It can happen to you when you're young at heart. No singing! We haven't even met Joey and Giraffe's challenge yet, and that's frightening. Robin, says Ron in Raleigh, and it's his gimmick, remember. You have to understand that was a youthful indiscretion on Henry Hyde's part. Hank was a 41-year-old man. How could he be expected to understand his behavior was beyond the pale? Oh, for God's sakes. Thanks for adding it. P.S., by the way, your boy J.D. Vance, once again, not my boy, is all in on Tucker's agenda. I'm sure he is. He's a walking, talking self-parody. Steve asks regarding faithful Catholics. I wonder how many of these faithful Catholics he speaks of are A, anti-death penalty, which the church is, B, anti-capitalist, which the church is, C, pro-union, which the church has been since 1891, D, anti-war, which the church has been for centuries, believe it or not, believer it or not, and E, pro-immigrant, which the church is. That would be F, none of the above. They only care about the precious little fetuses. Oh, but wait, says Megan. Republicans had no problem with taxpayer dollars going to fund the NRA agenda that led to children being shot to death in schools, parks, movie theaters, and other public spaces, right? Rush had no problem when health insurance covered his limp dick pills and OxyContin prescriptions. Right! Right! Sheesh, says Megan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and this is important. This is not moronic. This is a COVID update from Paul from Parts Unknown. Get up close to the speakers. Pay attention. Maybe timestamp this. It is 47 minutes into the program. Somebody remind me of that so I can put it in the show description for Podbean. Dear Robin, I said that I would write in when there would be updates at the lab, but so far there have been none. It seems they're waiting for the state or federal government to make the first move. Everyone here at the site is walking on eggshells, wondering when the hammer will finally drop, putting us back in full isolation protocols and split shifts. As a reminder, I work in a lab that makes two of the components for the COVID-19 test kits, and the site is very concerned about the virus getting in. If someone who's infected with COVID-19 sneezes into the dye we make for the kits, we could have 100,000 kits that test false positive because the virus is present in the dye, not the person being tested. They make special rules for us to make sure the people that work here and their families don't get infected. These rules included separating the site into two shifts so infection has a harder time spreading, which means I could go back to working from 2 p.m. to 11 p.m., can't be in a group or crowd larger than 10 people, waiting at least 2 weeks before you see another group of people after you've been in group of 10 or less, wearing masks all the time, staying socially distant, and being at least 10 feet from everybody in the grocery store, etc. These are the rules that everyone I work with are not looking forward to going back to when they lock us back down again. Note Paul's use of the word when, not if. When. No one is saying maybe locking down again at the site anymore. The morale on the site is low. We're just watching the numbers go up. And a lot of us have spouses who are nurses or doctors and are hearing stories about hospitalizations increasing locally. We got our lives back on Memorial Day weekend, and we're going to get less than a 3-month breather before we go back into isolation for who knows how long. Unlike average Americans, everyone at the site understands that if we have to go back into isolation, it is because not enough people got vaccinated. Let's change the subject and look at the Delta variant. I did some research and need to take the Horn community through a math lesson. Oh, dear. To explain my position. It's not the community I'm worried about. It's me, ciphering. Don't worry, Robin. All the ciphering's been done for you. All so thoughtful that way. I want to compare COVID stats from a year ago when we had no vaccine. My sources are from Johns Hopkins and U.S. COVID tracking data. There is a column. It is called National Numbers. There's a second column called Last Year on August 8th, 2020 versus third column August 8th, 2021. Number of COVID tests. Roughly on August 8th, 2020, roughly 783,000. August 8th, 2021, roughly 564,000. Positive tests, around 53,500, August 8th, 2020. August 8th, 2021, around 61,500. About an 8,000 increase. Positive test rate on August 8th, 2020, 6.6%. Positive test rate on August 8th, 2021, 10.9%. Number of deaths last year on August 8th, 2020, 1,086 versus August 8th, 2021, 112. Now, if you didn't already catch on, the lower number of deaths is due to the vaccine. If we use positive tests versus U.S. deaths and cross-multiply to solve for X, where X is the number of deaths in August 2021 that should have happened without the vaccine, we get 1,249 deaths. There should have been 1,249 deaths last Sunday, but there are only 112, which means the vaccine is saving 1,249 minus 112, over 1,100 lives a day from COVID. Why is that not a talking point for the Biden administration? Get vaccinated. It's saving lives. I think they're trying, but it depends on where you're paying attention. You're not going to hear that on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. You're not going to hear that on Newsmuck. You're not going to hear that on Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground. I think Paul continued. I added that editorially. I think the lower number of deaths is giving people a false sense of security and lets them ignore the real danger we're in. We have more infections now than we did this time of last year. Note that we're having less tests today than we did last year. But we have more positive tests with less tests. I noticed that. If we take a 10.9% positivity rate of the same 783,000 tests from last year, we would have had around 83,350 positives, not the 61,500 we have today. The false sense of security is due to the lower deaths per day, but we have a much higher number of positive tests on a level playing field, 85,350 this year versus 53,500 last year. This means the virus is out there 59% more than it was last year, infecting at least 59% more people than last year. And that is with a large portion of our population vaccinated. It was announced over the weekend, I'll add editorially, that the U.S. has finally crossed the 50% mark. Finally. Fully a month after the Biden administration had announced its goal of having 70% vaccination by July the 4th. Because too many Americans adhere to the Quackenbush theory from, I think, duck soup of whatever it is you're for, I'm against it. With a large portion of our population vaccinated, the virus is 59% stronger. That's what's so scary. We have so many people vaccinated, but still out there stronger than it was last year with nobody vaccinated. Think about how much stronger the Delta variant is that it can do that. This gives the virus more chances to mutate and become even worse. Like I said before, mutation is like a lottery, and each infected individual, vaccinated or not, is another ticket the virus gets to use in the mutation lottery. When the number of tickets starts totaling in the tens to hundreds of millions, hitting the jackpot and mutating becomes more likely than not. I say all this, Paul continues, to help the Horn community understand that we are still very much in danger, and you need to be careful out there. I know there's been some preliminary scary news about the Lambda variant out of Brazil being able to get around the vaccine better, and Peru, I think, as well. I'll do some more research on what is out there and write specifically about Lambda when I know more. Once again, here's my advice to avoid getting infected. One, wear a mask properly all the time when you are indoors unless at home with just those that live with you. Wear a mask outdoors if you are not vaccinated or if you are vaccinated but unsure of the vaccination status of the people around you. My stepdaughter had a birthday party last week, Paul says. We held it in our backyard. All the parents were vaccinated and everyone had their masks off. Two, stay socially distant from people. Try and stay 6 feet away from people when you aren't wearing a mask. At that birthday party outside, everyone was sitting 6 feet away from each other. When wearing a mask, stay 15 to 20 feet away if you can. I know it's hard in grocery stores. Just limit the time you spend with people close to you as you weave between people in a crowded aisle. Three, use hand sanitizer and clean things like debit cards you hand to other people to purchase things. Follow these tips. Stay safe and healthy out there, Horn community. Paul, from parts unknown. Paul is solid across the board. And, well, I saw the first mention of the Lambda variant in a CNN News You Can Use thingamajig early this morning. And, of course, I have the usual raft of people who are now dead because they wouldn't get the vaccine stories. 22-year-olds. Moms, doctors warning about the number of people getting the Delta variant who are teenagers. And hey, schools are already back in session in some places. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Paul, so very kindly for taking so much time to help us understand the gravity of this situation. It's nerve-wracking. And I know the moral dilemma around it, but I'm still looking into whether I should go and at least get one more Pfizer jab just to make sure. And I'm going to leave that alone. Nothing from you. No. Tim Foolscap. Oh, good name, Scott in San Diego. Tim Foolscap is a uterus-free prick. Sounds like somebody, Scott in San Diego says, sounds like somebody's been messing with old Tim's visible man or visible woman. Mixing and matching parts, I'd guess. Oh, well, as the late Frank Perdue would say, parts is parts. Yeah, you remember those visible man or visible woman models, right? Oh, yeah, I built one. Plastic scientific toys created by sculptor Marcel Jovine for Pyroplastics Corporation. Well, one of them was a model. You glued it together and stuff, and had to get the pancreases and the gallbladders and stuff in the right places. I remember very well. I think the Baptist version didn't have the naughty bits. Well, as noted earlier, Frank in Iowa wants to know, how's Rush doing today? Being as how the Hyde Amendment is under under fire. If we are to believe Tim Foolscap, Rush has been quite upset, but he's just going to have to learn to live with it, and he's learning to spend eternity. Yes, he is. He's learning to spend eternity with that eternally replenishing crate of pineapples. Right. In point of fact, I saw an NBC News story earlier by Phil McCausland, He writes, as vaccination rates lag and the new Delta variant surges, COVID infection rates among kids have risen and children's hospitals are seeing a spike in medical care needs among the young patients. Yeah, mommy and daddy are giving it to their precious lumpkins. Dr. Kelechi Higawara, medical director of the pediatric intensive care unit at Our Lady of the Lake Children's Hospital in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, said, it's scary, especially for kids who don't fully understand what's going on. They're air hungry, struggling for breath, and it's just scary. You have the illness, the fear, they can't breathe, they're isolated. That's hard for anyone to understand, but can you imagine what it's like for a kid? And at Our Lady of the Lake, they've been treating kids from 3 weeks old to 17 years old for COVID-19. And for the past month, Dr. Kelechi Higawara, she says that they've had 25 or 26 patients in a space designed for 20. And that's the last month, and things are not getting better. Things are getting worse. So NBC News reached out to six different children's hospitals, and every one of them have seen children come in infected because someone in the household, maybe a parent, brings the coronavirus home. And as often as not, or more often than not, it's because the parent who brings the virus home is unvaccinated. Dr. Jim Versilovich said, absolutely, household infections are the beginning of this pandemic. That's a major driving force in the spread of infections. We see it often within households, parents to children. He's at Texas Children's Hospital in Houston, Dr. Jim Versilovich is. We've certainly seen siblings, more than two at a time, with infection at the same time, so spread within households is certainly a very real phenomenon. And, of course, you know, whether Texas, Baton Rouge, you know, these are all stand states where they pass things like bans on mask mandates. I was up early for my filthy morning habit today, and I saw Morning Mika interviewing a member of the Arkansas legislature who was an actual physician who was an actual Republican. And yes, I had a low grade hissy. But lo and behold, he was, well, you know, people need to get the vaccine, but I mean, I don't want to, because they have to soft soap it. If you're a Republican, even if you're a doctor, you have to soft soap the idea of getting the vaccine. I mean, I don't want anybody to get upset at me because I still want to vote for me, and I want to stay in the legislature, but I mean, it'd be nice if people would get vaccinated and not kill their children. I mean, he didn't say that either. Oh, I'm sure every chance he gets that Arkansas doctor will grunt and bark and hoot about the precious little fetuses, and he won't worry about stepping on any toes. I'd love to know how he voted on the hateful trans medicine bill that Arkansas passed that they're currently being sued over. I really would. I'd like to know the answer to that. But he actually said people should get vaccinated, so I guess that's something in the way of a win. But, of course, the cue balls and maggots in Arkansas will accuse him of being co-opted by Bill Gates or something equally idiotic. 23 patients under 18 have been admitted to the system last week in Arkansas's Children's Hospital in Little Rock. 10 of those 23 under 18 are in the ICU. Of the 10 in the ICU, 5 are on ventilators. Kids under 18 on vents. Mm-hmm. Then there's St. Louis Children's Hospital, Missouri. 13 came to the ER for COVID. That was the last week of July. They had 20 who needed hospital beds in the first week of August. COVID positivity rates at Texas Children's Hospital in Houston have risen from 3% to above 10% among kids. It went from single digits of kids in the hospital with COVID, but as of last week, more than 30. At Children's Hospital in New Orleans, 13 children are in beds there. Six of them are under 2 years old. Four of the kids are in the ICU. Of those kids in the ICU, one of them's 3 months old, a little boy. A 23-month-old little girl, an 8-year-old little girl, and a 17-year-old boy.
It's a Chinese hoax. It's the Wu flu. It'll be gone by April.
Yeah, if you're a Republican, if you're a true blue, true red, dyed in the wool maggot, and you paid attention to that bilious, ignorant, lying ass, Donald Trump. Well, the question then becomes, when you get it and you get off the vent, will you learn then? And will you learn to put blame where it belongs? Will you spend your life then trying to explain to people that for any reason or no reason, Republicans will lie to you for nothing more complicated than a vote? And they will lie to you and they will kill you. They'll lie to you for money, they'll lie to you for religion, they'll lie to you for a vote, because they are, in fact, liars. At this point in time, 81 kids have died of COVID between March and July. And that takes in not necessarily a whole bunch of Delta variant. Meanwhile, they won't, Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis won't even tell people they should wear a mask in public. Yeah. Poor old Governor Asa Hutchinson, you know, in a way it's assholes who were involved in the great cleanest hunt day here on this Morin Monday. Governor Asa Hutchinson in Arkansas has had kind of a little bit of a light go on, saying, I sure do wish the legislature hadn't passed and I hadn't signed into law that ban on mask mandates, because we sure could use a mask mandate in our schools in Arkansas. Well, why don't you call the legislature back into session, Governor Asa? Jeremy in Vermont. Kids in the ICU. Well, it's just their time to go. It's what God wants, God gets. Nothing to see. Move along, please. I know. And we try to sort of defend our tender hearts against the agony of things like this with a sort of gallows humor. But Steve in New York, well, he touches it. A 10-year-old on a ventilator. I cannot begin to fathom how terrified this little boy was when they finally had to vent him. And we're the anti-child people, and they're pro-family? Fuck those fucking fucks! Robin, I keep saying it. I know. How can we have any compassion for the parents of these children who are teetering on the brink of extreme fear, anxiety, pain, and PTSD? Make no mistake about it. This kid and so many like him will have lifelong PTSD and will probably be forever too scared to go to a doctor. That story comes from Kentucky Stan. the Louisville Courier Journal. 10-year-old Kentucky child on ventilator due to COVID-19. Governor Andy Beshear said today. There's going to be limited information we can give you because we want to protect this child's identity and their family. Yeah, you know why? You know why you have to protect the child's identity and the family's identity? Because the fucking cue balls and the maggots will picket and hunt and hoot and grunt. Maybe Marjorie Traitor Gangrene Cue Ball can go and cheer about that. She actually went down to Alabama and praised maggots in Alabama for not getting the virus and spread, or not getting the vaccine and then spreading the virus. That is how awful she is. Every time you think she's reached her, you know, USRDA of awful, she has another helping. Governor Beshear added down in Kentucky, it's also important to know that this virus has reached one of our young ones. Little fella's critically ill. That was according to Dr. Stephen Stack, the public health commissioner. The boy developed an inflammatory syndrome that experts say is growing increasingly prevalent among children infected with COVID-19. As Dr. Stack described it, kids have an extensive inflammatory response in their body because their immune systems become overactive trying to beat the virus back. It starts out in some kids with respiratory problems. Other kids start out with gastrointestinal distress. And once that starts, Dr. Stack added, the inflammation goes out of control, and then it's the child's body overall, and they have a lot more problem. And frankly, medical science knows next to nothing about the syndrome. You know, if you look back at the history of the 1919 flu pandemic, you see that it ran through and it killed a shitload of people, and then it came back and it killed more. And it seemed particularly virulent among the young. We've talked about that impact on my family history. Three children in New York have died. They got the Delta variant, and they developed the inflammatory syndrome. And it's been compared, this syndrome, to Kawasaki disease, that inflames blood vessels all over the body, but it's not the same. The best advice the medical community can give to parents is to look for fever and a combination of any of the following: abdominal pain, confusion, diarrhea, red eyes, rash, swollen hands and feet, difficulty breathing, and of course, passing out. In fact, sometimes the abdominal pain is so bad that it mimics appendicitis. And with the appearance of any of those symptoms, they say that parents should get their babies to the hospital tout suite, because left unchecked and untreated, it can lead to heart troubles. Now, this isn't the vaccine. This is the goddamn virus. You know, one of the great disservices that the media did was to focus so much on things like myocarditis. You know, there's a teeny tiny itsy bitsy chance of it with the vaccine that would come with just about any vaccine. The risk to women is lower than the risk that they face, that women who use the pill face. But that was not broadly reported. And I wish to God I knew where this bullshit sterility argument comes from. But we know now, and I talked about the story, a week or so ago, maybe more. In men, the vaccine does not bring on sterility, but the Rona can. So, well, as he continued in his press conference, Governor Beshear said there was part of what he wanted to say that he wanted the kids run out of the room for. For parents at home, especially if you've got some young kids around, find something for them to do in the next 5 minutes or so. Sometimes we need to just be transparent and inform you about a couple of new developments that might seem kind of scary out of context, and we certainly don't want to do that to anybody's kids, including mine, if they're watching. And then he laid out the horrifying reality of it. God almighty. As Steve in New York points out, Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cueball, she's the new Fred Phelps, and her office is the new Westboro Baptist Church. The shame of it all is that Fred Phelps is dead, but Shirley Phelps Roper and the old Westboro Baptist Church is still busy. Dave Grohl and the Foo Fighters serenaded some Westboro Baptist assholes recently. The video's out there floating around. It went kind of viral. Singing a disco hit to them as they drove by on a flatbed truck. Yeah. But Steve also noticed something that I did as well. Those symptoms you mentioned are common to so many ailments and diseases for children. I can't even imagine the anxiety that parents will start to feel when this becomes prevalent, because every time a kid gets a tummy ache or other symptom, the parent will have to assume it's COVID and rush the kid to the ER. Robin, my rage has not until now reached this point. These are children. Yeah, Steve, but they're not fetuses, so the goddamn Republicans don't give a good goddamn. Sorry, not yelling at you, yelling with you, just so we're clear on that. And I've got, and I want to go to the phones. I hate to keep people on hold. But I want to share another Moran with you, if I may. Because... Trey in Kentucky, Stan points out, more than 99.99% of fully vaccinated people have not had a severe breakthrough case of COVID-19, according to a CNN analysis of CDC data as of August 2nd. Yeah. And I wanted to share, like I said, a couple of Moran nominations with you. One of them, well, it comes from a guy who actually calls himself a real, live, honest-to-goodness, no-kidding physician. I'm talking, of course, about Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head. The thing looks like it's been kind of active lately. Little tendrils sort of weaving about and whatnot. You know, it might be like that creature in... Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome? Or maybe like the little creature inside the body of the ambassador, the Archelian ambassador that's actually running the body.
The galaxy is on Orion's belt.
Yeah, you're not going to get anything that helpful from Rand Paul. No, instead, you get this. He's choosing freedom, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist is. Yeah.
It's time for us to resist. They can't arrest all of us. They can't keep all of your kids home from school. They can't keep every government building closed.
Actually, they can, and they can. Nobody's talking about arresting anybody, dumbass. Just a reminder, as we move into the election cycle for the midterms in 2022, and, you know, we're kind of already there, remember that this toxic, deadly... neo-maxi zoom dweeby is up for re-election, and there will be a viable Democratic candidate against him. I don't want to get his name wrong. He comes from the Louisville area, and had he been the nominee against Moscow Mitch, And if those ES&S machines were on the square, Mosto Mitch might be out of Congress, but no. People of Kentucky nominated a centrist because she flew planes one time and, I don't know, dropped bombs on brown people or something. Oh, liberal. If you're looking for a candidate to, you know, to support, once he's the nominee, help him out. He's a strong candidate. He's got good values. And wouldn't we all just come near to dancing naked in the yard if we woke up on, say, a morning in November of 2022 and found out that Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, wasn't a goddamn senator anymore? Wouldn't that be lovely? Anyway, Rand Paul is organizing the vaccine resistance. And Charles Booker, thank you, Steve in New York, thank you. I thought it was Charles Booker, but I didn't want to make the mistake. So thank you for serving as the Horn Family Ad Hoc Research Department this evening, Charles Booker. There really needs to be a lot of ads showing Rand Paul's comments that you're about to hear, Ralph's ads, and I agree. Let's play Sherman Set the Wayback Machine for Polio. And try to imagine for a minute then, I'm sure the footage would be grainy and black and white, you know, just the way Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, likes it. And, I know, Steve in New York says, if Booker beat Rand Paul, I actually would eat dirt and do whatever I can surmise running rabbits is. Well, that involves seeing a rabbit in your yard and taking off. You know you're not going to catch it, but why not? It's a metaphor for an act of silly futility, but nonetheless. Grainy black and white footage, you know, and that sort of tinny old 1930s era microphone audio.
You know, the one that sounds a little bit like this.
And Rand Paul saying,
"We are at a moment of truth and a crossroads. We will allow these people to use fear and propaganda to do further harm to our society, economy, and children by making people take the polio vaccine? Or will we stand together and say, absolutely not, not this time. I choose freedom. I choose polio."
It's not hard to imagine. Not at all.
To resist. They can't arrest all of us. They can't keep all of your kids home from school. They can't keep every government building closed. Although I've got... closed or might ought to keep closed. We don't have to accept the mandates, lockdowns, and harmful policies of the petty tyrants and bureaucrats. We can simply say no, not again. Nancy Pelosi?
Petty tyrants and bureaucrats. You know what petty, our English word petty comes from? It comes from the French adjective petit, P-E-T-I-T. It's used in women's clothing sizes for women of smaller stature. Women's petite means little. But you know what else is little? COVID-19 viruses. They're not even fully living cells. They're particles. They're itsy-bitsy teeny-tiny. And your body has a really hard time stopping them getting in. Petty tyrants and dictators? How about petty death, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist? Whew, I'm socially secure. I'm comfortably well off.
You will not arrest or stop me or anyone on my staff from doing our jobs. We have either had COVID, had the vaccine, or been offered the vaccine. We will make our own health choices.
Yeah, by the way, having COVID does not guarantee you won't get it again. It does not confer blanket immunity. Having the vaccine is intelligent, or having been offered the vaccine and resisting, remember, use the term resist, well, that's not quite the same thing, Rand. That's just being stupid.
We will not show you a passport. We will not wear a mask. We will not be forced into random screenings and testings. So you can...
You know what you will do, though? You will have a garden hose run down your goddamn throat and be horizontally crucified because you will not have the strength to resist Rand Paul when that moment comes. But it won't come for you because you've been vaccinated, you goddamn miserable prick. Oop, that's two miserable pricks in one program. Sorry about that. Oh, Dr. Freud. God, the braggadocio, the bluster, and this is, once again, because we talk about that here, this is stochastic terrorism.
You can continue your drunk with power reign over the Capitol. President Biden, we will not accept your agency's mandates or your reported moves towards a lockdown. No one should follow the CDC's anti-science mask mandates.
And remember where this comes from. I know I tell the story all the time, but it bears repeating. This is the son of an asshole, Ron Paul, who once in a, I believe, New York Times profile, told the reporter interviewing him that he held up as a hero a butcher in Pittsburgh, where he grew up, Ron Paul, who flouted World War II rationing requirements, rationing mandates, that limited the amount of meat that the folks here at home could have, could purchase, so that there could be meat to send to the troops battling fascism around the globe. But that butcher would sell meat on the sly at inflated plot prices on the black market, and Ron Paul thought that was heroic. When people who weren't Ron Paul were laying down their lives to preserve whatever it is that we consider actual freedom to be. You know, the freedom not to be gassed in a goddamn death camp.
And if you want to shut down federal agencies again, some of which aren't even back to work yet, I will stop every bill coming through the Senate with an amendment to cut their funding if they don't come back to work in person. Local bureaucrats and you...
Do it! Do it, Rand Paul! Let's see how fast you can run from whoever the fuck your neighbor is now.
Union bosses, we will not allow you to do more harm to our children again this year.
Union bosses.
Children are not at any more risk from COVID than they are from the seasonal flu.
Bullshit! We just went over all of that. Tell that to the mama and daddy scared out of their minds because their three-month-old is on a vent with COVID. Tell that to the parents of the 10-year-old child in your own home state, Rand Paul, who's on a vent because of COVID. Evil, evil. Evil attempt at a human being that Rand Paul is.
Every adult who works in schools has either had the vaccine or had their chance to get vaccinated. There is no reason for mask mandates, part-time schools, or any lockdown measures. Children are falling behind in school and are being harmed physically and psychologically.
What the fuck does he care? He hates the public schools. He despises the public schools. He and his filthy old daddy have referred to them as government schools that indoctrinate our precious little churins. Could someone, Ron and Raleigh asks, I want Rand Paul's neighbor's address. I have a little money in the bank, and I'm willing to give it to him if he'll stomp a mud hole in Rand's ass. I hate this arrogant motherfucker. Rand Paul is a vector of the disease. Rand Paul is a bioterrorist. Rand Paul is actively harming children and the parents of those children. He is the disease and a stochastic terrorist.
Psychologically, by the tactics that you have used to keep them from the classroom during the last year, we won't allow it again. If a school system attempts to keep children from full-time in-person school, I will hold up every bill with two amendments, one to defund them and another to allow parents the choice of where the money goes for their child's education.
So, well, hey, Joe Manchin, baby, the rubber just met the road. There's one way to keep Rand Paul from hurting children, and that is to take this power away from Rand Paul. Now, where do you think Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema would come down if the choice is between Rand Paul's right to assault democracy and the very right of our children to live? Don't answer that question. I don't like what the answer might be, because you and I both know, don't we? Just out of curiosity, Megan asks, can someone tell me what the fuck the end game is here, since the likes of Rand Paul, ophthalmologist, and Marjorie Trader gangrene cue ball seem to be dead set on killing off a good swath of their constituents? Do they think COVID is only killing Democrats, that Republicans are naturally immune and therefore don't need the vaccine? Because while the rest of us are freaked the hell out and trying desperately to take more precautions, these fuckers are rushing out headlong where angels refuse to go. I mean, if Maine and Vermont are mostly vaccinated and Alabama and Kentucky are on fire with this disease, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see what'll happen. No, seriously, what the fuck are they trying to do here? Got a simple answer. Megan, it's the American answer. They're trying to make a dollar. Because anti-vax is a big dollar. Anti-government is a big dollar in this country. And long has been. Go back to 1964. Richard Hofstadter. It's free to read on the internet. The paranoid style in American politics. And it is banging on all eight cylinders right now in the anti-mask, anti-vax Republican right.
Do I sound fed up to you? That's because I am. I'm not a career politician. I practiced medicine for 33 years.
No, he's not a career politician. Okay, then quit, motherfucker. Get out of the way. Stop hurting people. I practiced medicine for 33 years. You know, and you know what? He drew in a whole shit ton of Medicare and Medicaid dollars, government programs that he despises. That's why I say that he's comfortably well off. He's socially secure.
I graduated from Duke Medical School.
And founded my own ophthalmology board because I couldn't pass the real one.
I've worked in emergency rooms. I've studied immunology and virology. And I...
Yeah, he's studied it. Which is not the same as having made a life's work of it.
I ultimately chose to become an eye surgeon. I've been telling everyone for a year now that Dr. Fauci and other public health bureaucrats were not following the science, and I've been proven right time and time again.
Which is a lie. He's been proven wrong time and time again. He's been called down by Dr. Fauci. Dr. Fauci has done everything. Well, I think Dr. Fauci even called him a liar to his face. No lawsuit. Truth is an absolute defense.
But I'm not the only one who's fed up. I can't go anywhere these days without people coming up and thanking me for standing up for them, whether I'm at work or at events in Kentucky.
Not talking about the people who come up and say, you horrible human being, you're trying to kill my children, or spitting in his face or anything, because those people are very real, too.
Airports and restaurants or in stores, people thank me for taking a stand. They thank me for standing up for actual science, for standing up for freedom, for standing against mandates, lockdowns, and bureaucratic power.
And standing for the freedom of Americans to run to Canada for surgery, just like, Rand Paul did. Yeah, I know.
Power grabs. I think the tide is turning as more and more people are willing to stand up. I see stories from across the country of parents standing up to the unions and school boards.
You know who doesn't stand up to the unions and school boards? People who die of COVID. People who die of the Delta variant. People who have buried children and are still on their knees weeping at their child's grave. They're not standing up and thanking Rand Paul.
No.
I see brave moms standing up and saying, my kids need to go back to school in person. I see members of Congress refusing to comply with petty tyrant Pelosi. We are.
Does that refusing to comply part, does that also include the getting their pay docked and not being able to do a damn thing about it and losing the cases in court? I'm just asking here, just, you know, teaching the controversy, right?
At a moment of truth and a crossroads, will we allow these people to use fear and propaganda to do further harm to our society, economy, and children? Or will we stand together and say, absolutely not, not this time, I choose freedom?
Or death. Give me liberty or give me death, you know, all that Patrick Henry shit. Yeah. Lib Talker calls Patrick Henry shit. Sit, Liberty, sit. Woo! He chooses freedom. You know, every time I hear an asshat like Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, say, I choose freedom, I remember the lines that Chris Christopherson penned. And ponder the depth of its meaning. Yeah. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Rand Paul is probably not going to die of the coronavirus. But the people who pay attention to Rand Paul, some of them likely will. I mean, we talked about the shock jock in Florida. Don't get the vaccine! Whoop! Dead. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jesus. So we're over halfway through the program, and so far it's a goose egg. I don't mean the program, but I mean our attempts to get down below the $600 mark for fundraising. Because we still got Friday to finish off fundraising on. We did not end the week fully funded. Hate to mention it. I despise to mention it. But there we are. Yeah. COVID, Bill, in Allentown, not Altoona, said, I was told by my dad that one of my nephews has COVID-19. Don't know which variant it is, but since my dad is living in the same house, he has to quarantine. It's not your fault, but I'm fed up with the Paul family, Ron and Rand. Oh, I think anybody with a conscience probably is. Certainly anybody with two functioning brain cells to rub together are. Rand, Jeremy notes, Rand Paul has the vaccination, you just know it, he knows it works. Oh yeah, there's a photo of him getting it! On this tweet that he put out, right beneath it, there's a picture of him getting injected, and it says, Rand Paul resisting. And he's sitting there grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. Yeah. There's a $15 challenge relating to Rand Paul that I had probably better not give the name of, courtesy of Steve in New York. Thank you. Thank you, Steve. And Ralphs. Ralphs just jumped in. Thank you, Ralphs, so very much. Thank you. And met Joey and Giraffe's challenge, so we are down at like $590 now, which means that... Yeah, we're about $190 away from. Yeah, we're $190 away from fully funded for last week. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you. Oh, and as to Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cue Ball, Jude in the Great Northwest reminds us there are two candidates so far who have decided to run against representative three names. Marcus Flowers is one. The other is a young woman by the name of Holly McCormick. Either one I will support, Jude says. If I'm correct, there was no challenger on the ballot with Green. Thankfully, those are there are those wide awake and willing. Well, Jude, that's one of the creepy things. She had a Republican challenger in the primary who bowed out because of the death threats that her followers had inflicted upon him and his family. Yeah. Wait a minute. Okay, cowbell. That's for Sparky. From Andy Borowitz. Senate passes bipartisan infrastructure bill calling for Rand Paul to be paved over. And yeah, I know he thinks he's some sort of a patriot. He isn't, but I know he thinks he is. Hoi, Gewalt. But history's not going to be any kinder to him either. He probably fancies himself. I hate to think about it, but he probably has some degree of classical training, you know, in the classics. I mean, Latin, Greek, and ancient history. And he probably fancies himself some sort of Cato the Younger. Who, although filthy rich and a patrician, somehow earned a reputation for opposing tyranny because he hated Julius Caesar for the fact that Caesar forgave him his treason. I understand, Steve. No worries. No worries. I've got another clip. But I'll save that. This thing is, we've had this individual as a nominee before, but wow. And it has to do with the Rona. And I wanted to talk about the climate change report. That was actually my idea for what we were going to be talking about this evening, and we may yet. I mean, this is the hair on fire climate change report. Once again, the scientific community tells, no, we weren't kidding, really. The shit is hitting the fan. Has already hit the fan. And if we get to 1.5 degrees Celsius, well, cancel Christmas. Oh, by the way, fact checkers now say that's not actually a picture of Rand Paul receiving the COVID-19 vaccine. That's him getting some other vaccine that apparently didn't impinge upon his freedom. We regret the error. What we really regret, though, is Rand Paul. At all. But let's run over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott, how are you?
Who? Oh, what? Him again. Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Absolutely.
Good, because when I was on hold, the first part of my on hold, and it must have been a miracle, when you hit the audio of Rand Paul, the crackling went away. It was staticky as hell.
Well, so I've got to reorder the, you know how it is with patch cables, right?
Oh, I know, yeah.
This one is a particularly odd one. And, you know, things that were at Amazon don't always stay at Amazon.
Yeah, I know how that works. But anyway, it cleared up and everything is
good.
Fine. You know, as I was, first of all, where is that audio from? Is that the tape that he sends back to the home district every week?
I'm sure it is. I mean, it was just a tweet. Him standing in front of a gray screen and you know, grunting about freedom.
Oh, God. You got to wonder on some level, does he look in a mirror from time to time and just honestly say to himself, you know, you're the biggest bag of gas there ever was. You know, you got to figure he knows how full of you know, crap he is. Jesus. When he was going on and on about, you know, I will not take the shot. I will not, wear the mask.
Yeah, not in a box, not in a fox, not in a train, not in the rain.
We're not trying to feed you green eggs and ham here, boy.
Well, green eggs and ham is Ted Cruz's. That's his shtick.
Yeah, that's gimmick infringement. But Jesus Christ, it was making me hurt. I was having pains in different places. The stupidity hurts me. It's like kryptonite.
I mean, the fury just at this just rises up. And by the way, Randy Radar reminded me. Stephen Colbert over at The Late Show has already done the polio satire.
Okay.
So, you know, great minds.
Well, I mean, they're such an easy, you know, it's like a house of cards made of styrofoam cards. You know, the breeze caused by a rapidly opened door will blow it all down. That's how it is when you bring reality and scientifically based science to the conversation. It all comes tumbling down because they're assholes. They're full of shit. They're Christmas geese who are envious.
Because they are not as full of shit as Rand Paul is, yes.
Yeah, you know.
Christmas geese, green with envy and an insufficient amount of goose shit.
And frowning with their little goosey beaks or bills or whatever the fuck they are. Whatever they are. But that's not why I called. That is not why I called. Why did you call, Scott? Well, I'll tell you, Robin, why I called.
Well, you don't really give a girl much of a chance now, do you?
I'm sorry. I'm reading.
Now you're doing my lines for me.
I just, you know.
Oh, well, before you get there, Steve in New York wants you to know. No, Scott, the fucker thinks he's 1 bajillion % right. His photo is next to the word hubris in the dictionary.
Oh.
I mean, that's the way it is with these diehard libertarians.
Who was that Roman person that you said he was?
Oh, Cato the Younger.
Oh, I see. I misheard. I thought you said Felix Unger. Rand Paul is a mess. He could not be. He's a hot, steaming mess, now that I think about it. But no, he could not be Felix. Oscar, maybe, but not Felix. But anyway, I just a couple of random things. One of the random things, and I posted about it the other day on my old Facebook, it was either August 6th or August 9th of 1999, I smoked my last cigarette. So that was 22 years ago, if you can believe that. Smoker that I was.
That is amazing.
Tell me about it.
In 6 days, I will be 11 months.
Yeah. Good for you. Good for you. And isn't it, it seems to me that the way the government, I mean, and politicians, let's say, and government and media, And big business, for years lied to us about the risks associated with tobacco, even medicine, and I put medicine in quotes, some medical authorities, basically misled us for decades and decades and decades about the dangers of smoking. And I knew all of them. See, this is what a fool I was. I knew, but I continued to go to the store and buy the fucking thing.
But isn't that at this point in time, and even 20 years ago, isn't that true of every smoker?
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, I'm not giving shit to the smokers. I mean, I was only able to quit with a great deal of motivation.
I know.
And I had been unable to quit up to that moment, you know, 43 years.
I know.
And let's, you know, a lot of them, this is the smoking conversation, and it's actually an addiction conversation.
Well, yeah.
A lot of the cigarettes I lit didn't mean much to me. but the overall experience I thoroughly enjoyed. And especially after a meal, morning coffee, things like that. And also from another era. And people who don't smoke are like, God, that was a disgusting era. And it was. I agree. But, you know, you see, you know, those photographs from another era. And, you know, Italian film, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And Sophia Loren with a cigarette at a dinner table. Or that very famous Hollywood photo of her giving serious side eye to, who was it, Jane Mansfield? And I think there's an ashtray on the table. It's like, well, you know, burn her to the ground, well, too. But
what was that movie, speaking of Hollywood?
Bogart.
No, it was Betty Davis, and I think it was a French actor. Was it Charles Boyer, where he takes the two cigarettes and lights them and hands one to Betty Davis?
Yeah, what is that? Now Voyager?
Yeah, it might have been. It might have been. But there was a certain glamour to it, and that's
you're damn right. I mean, well, that's why, you know, Bogart with the dinner jacket and the black tie and Casablanca, and, you know, just the way he held the cigarette.
You faded out there. Where are you?
No, I'm right here.
There you are.
No, but Bogart and Casablanca with the dinner jacket and the black tie and the way he held the cigarette, yeah. Standing there in Rick's Cafe Americain.
Yeah.
Or at the table, I think he's got a cigarette between his fingers, and the bottle of bourbon is down to like the last couple of the fifth. It's not a pinter, it's a fifth. And it's down to like the last couple of swallows, and he says, "I saved my first drink to have with you." And you just go, oh, the agony.
Yeah. And I mean, I it doesn't seem like it's been as long as it's been, but I'm glad that section of my life is over.
Me too.
I kind of wonder
at it every now and then. When I'm driving down the road from one appointment or to another, I'll realize, wait a minute, you're not smoking a cigarette. Be like, I didn't think I could ever do this. Not that I'm patting myself on the back or anything. And
it is sort of amazing, isn't it? I mean,
absolutely.
I have a book around here somewhere written by Harry Reasoner, who was one of the original hosts of 60 Minutes. And it's just basically a bunch of essays that he did on the air at one time or another. And one of them is called On Smoking. And he talks about how, as if life doesn't have moments of its own, we smokers have to punctuate things by smoking, you know, after a meal. Or if you've been in a place where you couldn't smoke and you go outside and you light that cigarette up, or like coming out of a movie. Or, you know, after sex. Many of us smoked after sex. Don't say it. I know how your mind works. Do not say it. But it's like, it's as if life doesn't present enough moments of its own. We feel like we've got to interject the lighting of leaves ground up and stuffed into paper that we buy with real money.
Oh, yeah. And you know, I don't know if you ever read it, but Tom Robbins's late 70s comic masterpiece, and philosophical ponderings too, Still Life with Woodpecker. It's a meditation on the imagery of a pack of Camel cigarettes, for God's sake.
Yeah. I never read it, but I know of the
book. It's very dated now, but it's still worth the read. And there's this one little passage about how smokers you know, commune with fire. And when in fact, you know, Humphrey Bogart died of throat cancer.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, TV viewing tip for you, Scott.
Ooh, and I've got another one right back after, but go ahead, you first.
It's interesting from the standpoint of you know, Hollywood and film and a career. and it's kind of a film memoir by Val Kilmer.
Ooh, I've heard about this.
And it is heartbreaking. And I don't know that he was a smoker, but he wound up with throat cancer.
Yeah,
and so now he's walking around with a hole in his throat, and he he can barely speak.
Oh no, that is so sad. That is so sad. What? Where is that streaming?
I found it on Prime. I'm not sure which I'm not sure which network it's on. It might be HBO.
Okay, I'll find it. I'll find it. The one that I have.
But I think
you,
it's just called Val.
Yeah, it is. It is. Somebody was talking about it, and I don't know where I heard about it, but I'll check it out for sure. But the one that I have for you, it's like a 3 or 4 part thing on PBS. And I stumbled upon it. You know, actually, there were 2 episodes in, and I didn't. The first episode that I watched, and it's the only one so far, I think was the 3rd or 4th episode. It's either 3 or 4 episodes, and it's called, it's called Icon, Music Through the Lens. And the episode that I saw was album cover art. And I'm telling you, you cannot look away from the screen that you're watching it on, because it brought back so many memories. See, this is what I don't like about CDs. The art is not big enough because you have, what, a 5-inch disc versus a 12-inch piece of vinyl. And if you've got a double album, and by album I mean a vinyl record, you've got a fold-out, more or less. And the artwork on some of those albums was tremendous.
Oh, Hypnosis was a design firm that did all kinds of you know, super premium album covers. They did Pink Floyd covers. They did Alan Parsons Project covers. And it was HIPGNOSIS.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that's mentioned in the segment that I saw. But for those who didn't have their pencil or crayon ready, it's a PBS thing. You can get it at the PBS website. Icon, Music Through the Lens. And I've only seen 1 of the 3 or 4 episodes, but it was wonderful. And I plan on watching the rest. But, ooh-wee. There's something else I was going to ask you about or tell you about. Now, let me think. Put on my little thinking cap. I don't know what the hell it was, Robin. I'm getting like that, and it's starting to scare me. Because old grandmother on the father's side of the family, you know, there toward the end, had that old-timer's disease going on.
Yeah, old-timer's disease.
And I don't need that. I got troubles enough. Oh, I was out and about today, which was nice. And I probably won't go out and about for another month because, well, it's this COVID thing. That's what I was going to tell you. Was they are, by they, I mean the GOP, the assholes. They are about COVID and the vaccine and the masking and the whole 9 yards of it. They are about COVID the way a hardcore smoker is about continuing to smoke. And I'll tell one on myself here. I mean, I was such a hardcore smoker when I was in Cincinnati before I moved out here, you know, where the weather suits my clothes. And I didn't drive at the time. This was when I was planning to come out here. I'd sold the car to help finance the move and everything. There was a blizzard or something. And I didn't feel like trudging half a mile up the road to buy a pack of butts. And I'm looking through the fucking ashtray for a butt long enough to light up without setting my beard and mustache on fire.
There's a word for those. There's a word for those, you know. Do you know the word for that?
For the butts of that size?
Yeah.
I don't know. I dare teach me.
It's a snipe.
A snipe?
A snipe.
hunting for snipes, you mean? Or?
Yeah, that's the word I was, yeah, the little not entirely smoked cigarette that's sort of rolling around in the ashes. Yeah, that's a snipe.
I'll be damned.
A partially smoked cigarette.
It's a tobacco roach. See, that's what I would have called it. You know, you can get high as fluorescent fuck if you undo all of your roaches and put them in a pipe.
Oh!
Because that goddamn THC, I mean, that stuff collects. The roach acts as a filter, in a sense. And you're getting, I had an out-of-body experience from that once.
Hey, do me a favor. Keep talking. I'm going to be away from the mic just a second. I'm listening. But I just noticed there's a little firefly in the studio that is never going to find love in here. And I need to help her out, okay? Stand by.
Okay. Shine, little glowworm, glimmer, glimmer. Shine, little glowworm, glimmer, glimmer. That's all I know. But anyway, God, I haven't seen a fly. You know, I don't think they have fireflies out here. I've never seen them. And I've been out here 21 years, however long it's been. We got butterflies. I've seen butterflies.
Well, damn it. I think she went under the uninterruptible power supply. If I see her again, I'll give you the warning again, and I'll go. Because I was ready to... that just makes me sad.
She went under what?
The uninterruptible power supply.
Oh, okay. Is that where the snake lives?
Shut the fuck right up.
Okay, I will.
Now I'm looking around the rest of the floor going, oh, no. Yeah.
Anyway, that's...
I wanted to share something with you. I was talking about Joe Manchin and Kirsten Sinema. I had a note from Darlene in Connecticut, and she said, Sinema strikes me as a clown and a Republican groupie. I just can't take her seriously. She's making sure her name is on just about every amendment. She's acting like she just won the Academy Awards. This is the weird... I can remember when she was decidedly a progressive hero, you know, when she was in the legislature in Arizona. And, oh, God, I think Keith Olbermann had her on his program on MSNBC every chance he got. And we were like, wow, if she ever gets a federal job... she's going to be hell on wheels.
What has happened to her? Because I remember that now that you mentioned it.
Well, what happened to her is she entered the Senate. And she didn't just need her little liberal, ostensibly liberal bastion congressional district in Arizona to keep her in office. She needed the whole state. So that means that she has to, she thinks she has to be a centrist. Because she doesn't trust the so-called left in Arizona to muster up enough votes to keep her in office. You know, the calculus is what the calculus is.
Well, what kind of margin did she win by? I think it was a squeaker, as I recall.
Yeah, it was. And she knows that. And look, I mean, there are, with statewide offices, there is a certain calculation that goes on. I remember when Al Franken finally was confirmed to his seat in August of 2009. He didn't do a single national interview for like a year, year and a half.
I remember that.
He would gladly talk to Minnesota media outlets, but he was definitely trying to prove that, you know, Minnesota was his bailiwick and his focus.
And he also didn't crack any jokes.
Right. He was funny as a funeral director.
Well, I've known a couple of funeral directors who were a laugh riot.
Yeah, but not when anybody was watching.
Stop it. Leave Mrs. Smith alone. Let her rest in peace. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That was the only point I was making is that, you know, Kirsten does enjoy she enjoys the limelight. I mean, I will never forget nor forgive that stupid little curtsy she gave when she was fucking over America a couple of months back.
Outside of the White House in her...
No. She was casting a vote, and she gave thumbs down and then gave a little Catholic schoolgirl curtsy in front of the Senate clerk.
I guess in some sense, going to the Senate does change you, but it shouldn't change you in any important ways. If you're a bona fide human being, I don't mean to say she's not a human being, but I mean, yeah, there's part of being in the Senate where it's the old Lyndon Johnson thing. You've got to go along to get along, or get along to go along, or whichever one it is. And I'm sure you've got to do a little of that, because it is supposedly the greatest deliberative body, or once was the greatest deliberative body in the world, or the country, or whatever. But, you know, it is, after all, a place where you've got to, you know, I'll scratch yours if you'll scratch mine from time to time.
Right,
but
sure.
Still, it shouldn't change you, you know, your essence. In an ideal world, if you know, even Bernie, there are things that he has voted on. There was some airplane contract that would affect Vermont,
right?
And yeah, I can understand that he wants to, you know, take care of his state, but he didn't go crazy with it. In other words, he didn't turn a corner and become like Mitch McConnell or somebody like that.
Oh,
do you get what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I do. But I mean, that was the knock on Bernie, his support for the military industrial complex from some quarters. And then, of course, there's also his vote to provide blanket immunity from suit, or immunity to suit, for gun manufacturers, which he justified by saying, well, you know, Vermont's a small, gunned-up state. We love our guns in Vermont.
Well, I mean, he's got to look at himself in the mirror when he shaves every day. Apparently, he's...
Not if you go to the barber and have them shave you. That's how you get around that, you know.
Have you ever had a shave by a barber?
Oh, God, yes. I love them.
I never have.
Straight razor shave? It's a little daunting. See, you just hope that you're not sitting there with, you know, a barber who went to see Sweeney Todd the night before.
Well, and that's why I never have had that. Because sure as hell, the day I decide to do it is the day that the barber decides to go, oh, I don't know, just a wee bit crazy, you know?
In fact, there's a chef that I follow on Instagram. Does a lot of traveling, does a lot of good cooking. But he was in Turkey, I think. And he was getting he's got a big bushy beard. And he was getting his beard cleaned up, you know, really trimmed and tightened up, made to look nice, you know. So, you know, the Turkish barber, you know, worked up a really, really good lather in the mug there and everything, and painted him up with presumably a badger bristled brush. But then and really did a great job. But then at the end, he took it was like a cotton ball that he'd soaked in alcohol or oil or something, probably alcohol, and on the end of a wire, and he lit it, and he tapped it against dude's ears to burn up the ear hairs.
Oh no!
And I showed it to Agnes, and she was like, "Oh hell no!" But the chef was like, this is the most amazing thing. And then I'm thinking, well, you know, just do the nose while you're at it.
Oh, no, 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 no. Oh, you're giving me shivers.
I once got a shoe shine by a dude who set fire to the end of my shoes. Apparently playing with fire, back to what we were talking about with Tom Robinson, playing with fire is a thing. But, yeah, he got done, and it was my tasseled loafered trial lawyer shoes were just shining like mirrors. And then at the very end, he squirts a little something on him and just, and I'm like, what the fuck? And he said, no, you wait. This was in Nashville. And it, boop, 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 and it was, they were even shinier.
Jesus. When you said the end of your shoes, I thought the shoelaces, those little plastic.
No. I mean the wingtips.
Good Lord. I don't want no fire down by my feet. Or actually anywhere on me. I don't want no fire. God damn.
When you were a smoker, did you ever have that moment? Because I did. That moment where the cigarette filter sticks to your lip.
Oh, yes.
And you go to remove the cigarette from your mouth, and your fingers just slide down the cigarette and come away holding the cherry between your two fingers. And there's that there's that little split second where you go, wait a minute, my fingers are on fire.
Yes, I actually have done that.
And then you're going, puh, puh, puh. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I don't know.
How many times have you accidentally lit the filter?
A few times.
It's usually the last one in the pack, and you're like, "Fucking out!" It just burns.
Usually, when I'm drunk or high or something, how I lived through that, I will never know.
Do you remember cigarette loads?
And, of course, now. Oh, yes. Used to buy those at Al's Magic Shop.
Of course.
You had the ones that would stink, or you had the ones that would cause the cigarette to explode.
I like the exploding ones.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they exploded with a real bang.
Oh, they did, yes. They did.
And if you were really devious, you took one of your mama's sewing needles and you pushed it way down into the cigarette.
Now, I never thought to do that, but I wish I had now.
I mean, that's what a friend of mine told me about something, about what he did, you know, when he got the cigarette load and put it in his daddy's cigarette and used one of his mother's quilting needles. Yeah, that's what he said.
Now, there was, I wish I ought to make notes or something. There was something that I was, we talked about the smoking, and we talked about the COVID. They are being about COVID, all aspects of COVID and remedies for it and prevention of it, from it or whatever. They are being about that the way that hardcore smokers are about smoking. They know that it is bad for you.
See, I'm not sure I'm there with you, because there's way too many people in this country who say, and still say, you know, it's just like the flu, which makes me think these are people who have never had the flu. Because if I can do something to avoid the flu, I don't want the flu. The flu is awful.
That's the equivalent of what my uncle Alec used to say. Now, he was a hardcore fucking smoker. He was a four-pack-a-day man and a type A personality on top of it. But we would get on him about smoking, and his comment was, well, I'm going to die of something.
Yeah, well, that's the whistling past the graveyard of the smoker.
And you know what, Robin? He sure as hell did. I think he was 56. Came off the boat from fishing on the Chesapeake Bay, carrying one end of the cooler that the fish on ice were in, and his heart attacked him, and he was gone.
And they stood there over his casket and said, we told him the smoking would kill him.
Well, I don't know. It's just insane, some of the things human beings do. Our power, what I was getting at, our power of denial, maybe that's a better way to put it. Our power of denial or self-delusion or just choosing to be right, in quotes, rather than to be happy or rational. How is it that human beings are wired in such a cattywampus way?
Well, it's because we have the capacity to know and the capacity to believe, and the capacity to believe includes the capacity to self-delude. And it probably goes back to our you know, our primate days. But back in our primate days, evolution had a way of weeding us out rather quickly. So, you know, let's say Og and Gerd are standing there talking about leopards, and Og says, well, I don't want to get eaten by no leopard. And Gerd says, there's no such thing as leopards. Well, natural selection will take care of Gerd. But we don't really, but that was at a time when, you know, losing a member of the population base could make a rather profound impact on the evolutionary future of the species. Now that there's billions of us, and in a way, that's what the mask holes and the COVIDiots are counting on. They're not going to get it because their capacity for empathy is so severely compromised. They frankly don't care who does, as long as it's not them.
Yeah.
You know, witness any coverage by any cable news network of a tornado in Louisiana, Mississippi, Georgia, Tennessee, Arkansas, etc. And they'll stick the camera I remember one notable exception to the rule, but almost without fail, they stick the microphone and the camera in somebody's face and says, "How does it feel to survive a tornado?" And he or she can be standing there, and they can be carrying bodies out in bags from the house down the street, and she'll say, "I just want to thank my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for sparing us from the storm." Utterly oblivious to the entire family that got killed 100 feet away.
Oh, the Lord was pissed at that family because they
and you know, Twain talked about the same thing in the war prayer. You know, when you pray for rain for your crops, you could very well be praying up a flood that'll ruin your neighbor. But we are mostly not wired to think that critically. Mostly we tend to look at our interest and no one else's, which wraps into the whole climate change report. You know, Steve in New York said earlier the password is unequivocal. And that's what this report, you know, it's unequivocal. This is happening, and it's going to keep happening. Yeah. And if you don't like what's happening now, you're really not going to like what's happening in 10 years. By which point, it will be
9 degree.
By which point, we're like 1.1, and we'll pass 1.5. And once you get past 1.5, it's no turning back. This is the future. And the report makes fairly clear that the only way to avoid that is to end our reliance on fossil fuels, period. And
we're screwed. We're already screwed.
In fact, I was talking with a friend about it today, and I said, you know, this is what makes it, all of this... Every piece of climate change legislation is going to land in front of Joe Manchin, and he's going to kill it.
Yeah.
Because it is financially advantageous to the Manchin family for him to kill it. And he doesn't care what happens to anybody else on Earth as long as it's good for the Manchin family. And he's oblivious to the fact that there are yet little Manchins out there, unborn and undreamt of, for whom this will be every bit the nightmare it is for all the people that he doesn't give a fuck about.
Well,
because he's got that myopic view of reality, where there's nothing beyond the field that his little binoculars show him. There's nothing to the left, nothing to the right, nothing above, and nothing below. It's just what he wants to see. And while that's a character flaw in Joe Manchin, it's not like it's novel to the rest of humanity. You know, if If you're sitting somewhere and you're being inundated with rain and the water is rising, you really don't give a fuck if half of California, or if an area of California the size of Los Angeles is on fire. Because it doesn't touch you directly, and it doesn't touch you immediately, and it's slow rolling. And I'm not justifying or explaining away that behavior, but I am pointing out that, I mean, that's how climate change has become the problem that it is. Some people can outright deny it, and some people can just say, well, you know, hey, look, it's Jim Inhofe in January in the Senate of the United States, Scott, showing up with a goddamn snowball.
Yeah, I remember that.
And, of course, the dainty, delicate rules of the Senate don't allow anybody to stand up and say, you stupid bastard, it's January in D.C. Of course, you know, it's the scene from Life of Brian. You know, of course it brought forth juniper berries. It's a juniper bush.
Well, see, here's the problem, though, when it comes right down to it.
Sorry, I'm barking. I didn't mean to.
No, we will never convince a vast number of people of the reality of climate change. You can have charts and graphs and photo 8x10 photos, glossy photos with circles and arrows and paragraphs on the back, and you're not going to convince them of that because it's too much of a threat to their money and their power. I mean, it's like a hardcore sinner that you take to revival week at the church. You can take them every summer when the evangelist comes in from another part of the county to preach for the week, and they're just going to go out front afterwards and smoke their Lucky Strikes and go out drinking and carousing later on. Because they are set in their ways. Do you know of any a climate denier or climate change skeptic who ever saw the light? I don't. Maybe they're...
I was about to say that I didn't. I don't know of anybody that's come around. Joe Manchin says, well, it's real.
Well, but that's not enough.
No.
To say, oh, well, it's real. The question to Joe then is, well, what the fuck are you doing about it? While there's still time and precious little time in the grand scheme of things to affect any meaningful change. But see, they don't want to affect meaningful change because they're going to, in their mind, they're, oh, well, we'll die eventually. Got to die, like my uncle, got to die of something. And I'm going to heaven anyway, so fuck it. Well, goddamn, that's no way to be. It's the way they're being, but there are better ways of being, I think. I could be wrong, but I think there are better, you know, there are better ways to be.
And we're already past it. And according to the report, we're already past some points of no return. The ice that has melted ain't coming back.
No, hell no. I think this is how they've planned it. They want to have vacation land and sightseeing up at what used to be the fucking North Pole. Because sooner or later, it's going to be like going to Fort Lauderdale. Not that I want to go to Fort Lauderdale, but you get what I mean.
Yeah, but it'll only be that way when we start seeing headlines, you know. North Pole man. You know, as in Florida man takes alligator to liquor store.
I can see it now. But
I mean, that happened.
There was one of the documentaries about climate change that I saw maybe 10 years ago. One of the segments of it had to do with the fact that they're waiting for the ice to melt at the polar caps, or at least the northern polar cap, because it makes drilling easier.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, what the hell are these people thinking? We all can't be what's his name? The Amazon guy. We all can't get our own fucking rocket, Jeff Bezos.
And where are you gonna go?
Well, that's the other question.
There's no planet B.
It boggles the mind, at least on some level, it boggles the mind.
I mean, when Jeff Bezos went up there and said, you know, we need to move all industrial processes off the planet, and I plan to own every one of them. I thought, you know, you could, because I was talking with Kate in Canada last week, and she said, yeah, you can see the tar sands from space. And I'm thinking, Jeff Bezos must have seen the fucking tar sands, and oh, we got to move industrial production. Yeah, where are you going to put your tar sands installation on the moon? That shit is derived from organic matter, of which there ain't none on the moon.
Well, and it's funny that you mentioned space travel. One of my favorite movies, I like the book better, but the movie was okay, was the Tom Wolfe book, I believe it was, The Right Stuff. No, who was it? Tom Wolfe, yes. The Right Stuff, about the astronauts.
Yeah, I did. Hold on. Are you there?
Yeah.
No, okay, the crackling started, and I was wiggling the cord. Oh, no, I saw the movie, read the book.
Okay, there's a phrase that astronauts, and not so much astronauts, but test pilots used to use when you auger in, when you crash your test plane. It's called screwing the pooch.
Yeah.
You familiar with that term from the book?
Very much.
Well, we may as well say it. Game over, we have screwed the pooch. I don't think there's any way out of this.
The report says there is, but it's kind of grim in that the way out is hard and requires the cooperation of almost every human being on this planet. But it's not just every human being. It's not every human being on this planet. It's every human being in every developed nation on this planet who is of anything resembling wealth. Because for the most part, people who are subsisting in the so-called developing world are not part of the problem. You know, a Kung Bushman living as a hunter-gatherer in the Kalahari is not part of the problem. The Yanomami people in the Orinoco Basin are not part of the problem. You know, but we are. I am. You are. Jeff Bezos goddamn sure is. Elon Musk most assuredly is. And I've had people on this program, and we have a hard time doing it, delving, because I keep asking the question, will we ever actually talk about what it is really going to mean to try to save the ability of this species to continue to exist on this planet? And it's for people who are sot in their ways, as you mentioned a little bit ago, it is a deeply uncomfortable conversation, Scott.
Well, the report shows, I mean, whether they believe it or not, there's some solid science and book learning in evidence in that report. They didn't just make this up. They didn't just pull it out of their ass. How long has this climate report been worked on?
Well, I mean, it's an ongoing work in progress. It builds on previous work. Look, any one of us, because you know this program exists only online, okay? And so odds are, and you know, God knows we haven't, not this network. Haven't pitched any ads, tried to, you know, hand over the members of our community to the tender mercies of capitalism. We haven't done that. But I can't go looking for my news stories every day without being asked to buy this or buy that. And it is, you know, it's attractive. You know, you think, ooh, that would be cool to have. Ooh, what a nice gadget that is. Ooh, I want an ice cream maker that I don't have to crank or doesn't make a whole bunch of noise, or I don't have to freeze a bowl. Ooh, I could buy it. But, you know, that thing's made of metal, which has been mined somewhere. It's made of plastics that have been made from drilling oil out of the earth. Every aspect, it's kind of, you know, you were talking about the military-industrial complex a little bit ago. And the reason it works so well is every member of Congress has some aspect of the military-industrial complex somewhere in their county or in their district.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So everybody is seduced into the system. And it's the same thing with consumerism. And I'm not trying to be holier than thou because I'm as guilty as the next person. But when you buy, when you're at the grocery store and you buy some table grapes that have come from Chile, it becomes, I mean, and if you stop to take a moment to think about it, how ridiculous is that? I mean, people visit Vegas to live a luxurious life, and you know that, and they can fly into Vegas and sit down to dinner, eating a lobster that flew further to get to Vegas than they did.
Yeah. Well, why are people buying grapes from Chile? Has California? Did I not get the memo that California has quit doing grapes?
No, but they don't do it 24/7, and they can't do it enough. And they can't do it enough for the entire country. You know, why does my beef come from Argentina? I mean, did you ever look at the label of a can of corned beef? You know, with the little key on the side. Product of Argentina, baby.
Yeah, but the beef in your grocery store, that doesn't come in the meat section.
You don't know.
Well,
the stuff that's held out is American beef. Frankly, oftentimes goes back and forth across the U.S.-Mexican border. Did you know that?
The thing about every congressional district having a stake and a part in the military-industrial complex, there has certainly got to be revenue to be had, monies to be made in doing what we can to get off of carbon-based energy and combating climate change. God knows, I mean, the making of the windmills and the making
turbines, and Sparky will reach through the internets and strangle you for saying windmills.
I'm just saying that if the same commitment existed, the anti-military industrial complex, if we change that out and have every congressional district playing some viable and important part in saving the fucking planet, there's got to be money in that. That's where the point I was making with the turbine, the wind turbine, Sparky. I'm sorry. at least I'm not talking about the 60s, so get the fuck over it. But you know what I mean. I mean, certainly, we had the national will to send two people to the moon, you know, before the end of this decade and bring them back safely to Earth. What the fuck's wrong with this country? Don't we do big things anymore?
No, we don't, frankly. We don't. Well, because we've turned
that over to the private sector.
That's when I remember private sector really entering the lexicon, was with Reagan. And as with everything, Reagan is the beginning of the end of all of us. But just to sort of flesh out the idea, if we have to get to a point, like the report says, where we are not using fossil fuels anymore, well, fossil fuels doesn't just mean that we're not going to burn natural gas for heat or to run the turbines for our electric generation, and we're not going to burn coal and we're not going to burn oil. It also speaks to how we use it in other applications. So that means, to go back to the reference I made to Rand Paul's filthy old daddy, Ron, we're going to get to a rationing point. As a species, we've got to get to a point where we are only using fossil fuels for absolutely necessary componentry. And if you look further, far enough out there, you know, I love the idea of electric cars, but if you're powering electric cars by plugging into a power grid that's generating the electricity with coal or frack gas,
it's like, what's the point?
Right.
You know?
But the car still has to be made, and electric cars tend to be, because the batteries are so goddamn heavy, they tend to be, there's a lot of plastic in them. Well, where's the plastic coming from? Fossil fuels. How about the metal? How are we smelting the steel? How do you have high carbon steel with no carbon in it?
Yeah.
And so it becomes a much more complicated process if we actually drill down and think about it. The milk in your coffee. Okay? Comes in a plastic jug. Where'd the plastic come from? I mean,
you can bet your boots that cow wasn't hand milked.
Right, and there's no there were machines made of it. Yeah. And rubber. You know, everything changed in terms of how we move around when the process that could turn rubber into something hard enough to be a tire was invented. Okay?
Yeah.
Was that Harvey Firestone? I don't remember.
It was Goodrich.
But Charles, you know, Goodrich. we put banana, you know, there's a banana boat song. You know.
Hey-o.
Bingo. And so we're not going to grow, we're probably not going to grow bananas in Maine. So kiss the bananas goodbye. And the reason that, you know, the reason that we have strawberry preserves is because back in the olden days, people lived in places where you could not grow strawberries in the dead of winter. And so strawberry preserves are literally strawberries that have been preserved for later usage.
Yeah.
Where are you going to get the sugar for the? Where are you going to get the sugar for the strawberry preserves? Because I don't think we're going to grow sugar. I don't think we're going to grow sugar cane in Missouri.
No.
Do you see how complicated it gets?
Yeah, it's all interlocked and intertwined, and you'd have to get.
And I'm so old I can remember when they started talking about, you know, globalization is the only future we have. Globalization, it turns out, is a goddamn suicide cult. But I'm not being some sort of holier than thou. I'll miss bananas. Shit, I don't even drink caffeine, but I'll miss my decaf. Because there aren't any coffee groves in West Virginia. But
I get where you're going. I mean, I really, really do.
The story I tell about oysters every holiday season, back in the day, my family ate oysters once a year on Christmas, because that was when it was cold enough to pack the oysters in the shell on ice in barrels, put them on trains, and send them up the New River Gorge from the Chesapeake Bay.
Yeah.
Because it was the Chesapeake and Ohio Railroad. And we were on the way. Goodbye, oysters. Goodbye, shrimp. Goodbye, sushi.
Well, the fucking oceans are dying, or if not dead.
Well, there's that.
I mean, it's...
The acidification of the ocean that has already taken place is probably not reversible.
And it's like, you know, Mr. Exxon, Mr. Texaco, Mr. Sunoco, Mr. whomever. Did you get your money's worth? Was it really worth it? You know, Mr. GM and Mr. American Motors and Mr. Ford. and Mr. Honda and Mr. Mitsubishi and all the rest of them. Did you get your money's worth? I mean, that's what it comes down to, because nobody does anything unless there's some dollars changing hands, you know? And it's like...
Yeah.
We have progressed ourselves into oblivion.
And if you are, for instance, the Chinese government, and you've got, what, 1.8 billion human beings you have to worry about? Because when you're an authoritarian regime like the Chinese government, you're constantly worried that they're going to rise up and, you know, that'll be the end of you. And so that's why you rule with such brutality.
Yeah.
And you tried, and that was why the race was on so desperately to create a semi-capitalist economy there, so everybody could be co-opted and sucked into the consumer cycle. Well, China is where we have dumped all of our a great deal of our industrialism now, and climate, and this isn't some anti-China screed, it's not. But they've got a real problem if those industrial processes fall apart, because that's what's fueling their economy. And meanwhile, you know, they've got these horrible authoritarian tendencies anyway. We should, you know, as progressives and liberals, we should be talking about what's being done to the Uyghurs, you know, every day. But it seems to be that where the United States is concerned, and largely the developed so-called West, you know, we will decry a genocide. I mean, this is our history with genocides. You know, like, oh, damn, it's a shame what Hitler's doing to the Jews and the Gypsies and the, well, not so much the homosexuals. We hate them, too. You know what I mean? And then after it's all over, it's like, God damn it, never again. And then you get Rwanda. I mean, and I'm skipping a few, but you get Rwanda, and there we are. Well, you know, it looks like there's a genocide going on there. Do you have any idea how hard it is to get into Rwanda? I mean, it's really, really difficult to get to Rwanda. I guess we can't do anything. Oh, damn, look at that genocide. Son of a gun. And here we are with the Uyghurs. And you got millions of people in concentration camps, and it's a damn shame China's doing that. I mean, you can't really do anything about that. That's China, you know, they got nukes. And so after the Chinese have wiped out the Uyghurs, God damn it, not the Uyghurs, never again. And it's all after the fact. And it's mostly self-congratulatory or not even congratulatory, but the self-soothing hand-wringing when we failed to do something we could have done something about. And I fear that climate change is going to be the same way. I mean, what do you say to a developing nation that says, oh, well, okay, the West, you had your cars and your highways and everybody living high on the hog, and oh, now we can't? Because that's their response.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, it's like we paved the way in the sense of mass consumption and the industrial power and might of this country for a good chunk of the 20th century. And we have the burning fucking rivers with the Cuyahoga. You remember? You're old enough to remember when the fucking Cuyahoga caught on fire.
Right. And it wasn't even the first time.
No. But, I mean, are there rivers now in other parts of the world that are burning?
Yes.
Probably, yeah.
Or, never mind, how about damn near entire countries? The tourists are still flocking to Greece because, you know, lockdown, and we got to travel now. People are going to Greece. Greece is on fire. There were people reenacting 79 A.D. In Pompeii in Turkey, you know, literally running into the water to escape the fire.
Well, see, I knew the world was going to go up in one huge incandescent glow in my lifetime. I didn't know I was going to be this
It's all, I mean, it's all over the place. And the places that are still halfway decent, capitalism has largely, you know, gone after. One of the things that just horrified me more than a lot of other things, because there's plenty of horror, is when I saw that story recently about how the Amazon is now a net carbon emitter, not a net carbon sink.
Yeah.
Because the capitalists, especially on steroids under Jair Bolsonaro, are deforesting. I mean, I'm so old I can remember when Sting was wringing his hands about the deforestation of the Amazon. You know, back when, you know, the police were still a going concern. And it's only gotten worse and worse and worse.
Well, we should rename ourselves as the Gruesome Twosome. Here I called an hour and a half ago, beginning a brand new week, just got back from paying my rent. Not a
good mood
in the world.
Lovely day in San Diego.
Humming the theme song to, you know, whatever. And by the end of this call, I want to find something sharp and stick it into my eye or my ear or whatever.
It's that's like me.
A calm, basal state, you know, just as happy as the proverbial clam. Oh, the clams are dying? Oh, God. Why do we? But I make fun. I make a joke. But God damn, there's, you know, if we could put the brain power and the energy, the human energy, that a lot of us use it, sniping at one another and all of that, and apply it toward, you know, thinking out, figuring out, and solving some of these situations, where would the fun be in that? Yes, I know, but, you know, I think having a future, planetarily speaking, is fun. I think, you know, it's hard to go on vacation on a planet that is like burning everywhere, or flooding,
yeah, that,
or mudsliding, or, you know, pick your catastrophe. You know, catastrophes are us is what we're going to rename the fucking Earth. You know, and it's like,
and maybe we're stumbling onto a law of nature. Maybe this is what happens. Maybe this has already happened on Norblap 9 too. Because nobody's showing up to save us.
Well, it's up to us, though, isn't it? I mean, us.
Well, it is. It is. I mean, sooner, you know, we have to say Klaatu Barada Nikto to ourselves.
Yeah. I just.
And we can, but the point I'm trying to make is that we can say that to ourselves. But we have to mean it. And you know, before I get some shitty piece of email, I'm part of the problem. You're part of the problem. Shitty email writer is part of the problem. Because we have all been co-opted into the problem and seduced into it. And we are incapable. You know, very few people within the reach of my voice could live off-grid with no fossil fuel interaction whatsoever. I mean, look, there's a comparison made by, I forget what his first name is. His last name's Jared Diamond. And he wrote a book called Collapse and compared various societies and how they fall apart. There is a valid critique of it, but one of the things he points out is that at roughly the same period of time, or period in time, two relatively comparable cultures, with the exception of metal technologies, reached a point of total deforestation. And that's the Mayans and the peoples of the British Island. Ireland, too, for that matter. But, you know, England, Wales, yep. Scotland, Ireland. And the Mayan area were both almost completely deforested at the same time. the Mayan culture that produced those pyramids and an amazing written language and profound art and warring city-states, just like the English, they went into collapse. No more pyramids. It took a while, but they got there. No more pyramids. Everybody goes back to farming. But they had less distance to travel to get there. Meanwhile, on Britain, they're deforested too. And their people are roughly in the same spot technologically. I mean, like I said, except for metals. But they discovered coal. And they began burning coal because they had no further wood to burn. And eventually the burning of the coal leads to the Industrial Revolution, which everybody tends to look back at and say, oh, that was a great idea. Look at all it did. But if you talk to some sociologists and some anthropologists, and I largely co-sign this idea. From the development of sedentary agriculture to the present, 7,000 years, roughly, we had been a successful hunter-gatherer species for 60,000 years previous to that. How about that?
You blanked out at the most critical part.
Oh, okay.
7,000 years?
7,000 years of sedentary agricultural society that leads to industrial processes and everything. And, ooh, boy, we got Frisbees and wheat checks, right?
Yeah, we sure as hell did.
And cars. And we went to the moon. But the fact of the matter is, if you compare apples to apples, we were far more successful as a species in the 60,000 years that we were hunter-gatherers than we have been in these 7,000 years, because in these 7,000 years we have pushed ourselves to the inability of the planet to support human life. So in any kind of qualitative analysis, you have to say that the 60,000 years were us doing better than the 7,000 years now.
And the key to that was the cooperative nature of doing that to an extent. I mean, people depended on one another for their very existence.
Right. Homo sapiens, 100,000 years. Tops. Goddamn dinosaurs lasted as species for a million years. But we're dominant? We had it over on them? No, I mean, the Brontosaurus or whatever we call it now was an herbivore, and by God, it never had old wheat checks. We win.
Or a frisbee.
Yeah. So,
well, we're
fetch
we're,
spot.
Well, we have we're progressing. We are doing progress. We're progressing ourselves into oblivion. I mean, I can't think of another way to describe it.
No, I don't. Well, and the thing is, if you study, and you know, it's been so long, but if you study things like anthropology, archaeology. You know, you find these seminal moments, you know, fire, stone tools, Ashalian hand axe, Clovis point. And you can plot a timeline, a developmental timeline for humanity. And so, no, you don't really have that. I mean, you can have some evolutionary biology going on with the dinosaurs, and you know, the paleontologists are really good at that. But as a species, And it drives people crazy. It's really wild. I've seen threads about this on social media. It's like, God damn it, how dare you say that the hunter-gatherer... Well, but hunter-gatherers had more leisure time than we do. That's a fact. And if I mean, that's a measure, you know. Michael Pollan has argued, and I think successfully, that the hunter-gatherer diet was better and more varied than ours is. And he argues that ours, you know, our diet basically boils down to diesel fuel and number two field grade corn, Roundup Ready corn.
Oh, God, don't get me started on the...
And by the way, Ron and Raleigh just said, that's weird. Less than a minute before you said it, I said, Gort, Klaatu Barada Nikto. Quantum entanglement, asks Ron and Raleigh. And then the Amish and the Mennonites will inherit the earth. Yeah. And that's part of their operating system. Is that this is fragile and transient, and of course they've got all the weird social hang-ups that any religious cult does, but there you go. A note from Mike in Cascadia. An observation today, subject line, railroads. An observation today from Seattle that fits with your conversation with Scott. I'm currently working in East King County near Redmond and Woodinville. Just east of Seattle. Since I'm down here on a temporary basis until I can start working from home, I'm trying to explore the area and get to know it. Therefore, before work, on my bike, I've been enjoying the many miles of beautifully graded paved trails, including the Burke Gilman Trail, the Samish River Trail, Samish, and the East Lake Sammamish Trail. The entrance to Woodinville from the north is photogenic with an old railroad trestle crossing over the network of surface streets. The rails crossing that trestle span for miles east and west from that spot. The rails are rusting and engulfed with weeds. I survey those rails every day as I drive through there in heavy traffic. Both those trails that I enjoy and those rusting rails used to be part of a vibrant railway network around Seattle. Ironic now, with clogged traffic, those railways are sitting idle and empty. There should be a light rail network on all those old routes, but no. The auto and oil industries killed the railways, and here we are. Anyway, I thought that kind of fit, and it does. I mean, I observed the same thing on one. I observed the same thing on one. My one great railroad trip from Thurmond, West Virginia, to Chicago, and oh, what a nightmare that was. Because we went Amtrak on the Cardinal, and the Cardinal runs on freight rails, and we were beaten half to death. Because, you know, coal doesn't care how many bumps there are in the track.
No, but...
And all along the way, there were sometimes two and three sets of parallel tracks. Just rusting. And, in fact, I was watching an episode, because, like I said, I watched the Anthony Bourdain bio documentary. And it's brilliantly made and heartbreaking. But in one of his episodes where he's in Japan with the guy who runs Masa, the most expensive restaurant in the United States, maybe the world, in New York City, they went home for him to Japan. And on one of the locations, Bourdain just idly watches a bullet train go, zzz, and he goes, and by the way, why don't we have those? And why don't we? And it's the same question Mike in Cascadia is asking. And the answer is because Republicans. You know, bless his heart, I used to give him unmitigated hell, but Nick Rahal busted his ass as my congressman to make sure that Amtrak at least remained alive. And now, but Republicans have always hated passenger rail because airline lobbyists pay so much better. And I hate getting on a plane. I do. I hate the smell of the kerosene, you know, jet fuel. It's like, you know, no matter how much they clean the bus, you get on the great big bus, and it smells like diesel.
Yeah.
And so DHL has, Ron sent this along, and said the future's already here. The freight shipping company, DHL, has ordered a fleet of electric planes.
Do they have those?
Yes. Yes.
How is that possible? Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe it is.
You know,
are they big? Are they? They would have to be big planes for a freight company to use them effectively. And
yeah, they're turboprop fan jets on the back. Apparently, if this artist rendering is to be believed, the maximum the plane is called the Eviation Alice. Its max range is over 500 miles. And DHL has ordered 12 of them. And the Eviation aircraft is built in the Seattle area. Further irony, further quantum entanglement. Remember the earliest aircraft were literally canvas over wooden frames.
And wood, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But wait a minute, are they electric in the sense that electric cars are electric? I mean,
yes.
I would think that the batteries, the weight of batteries needed to fly a plane would be prohibitive unless they've done a workaround.
Do you know what kerosene weighs?
Well, yeah, there's that.
I mean, I'm no engineer, but weight is weight.
Yeah, that's true.
Charging is 30 minutes per flight hour. And it can be flown by a single pilot, and I bet they're working on making it pilotless. And carry 2,600...
I'm sorry, say it again? There can be flown...
Carries 2,646 pounds of freight. 440 nautical mile max range.
Damn. I need to pay more attention to.
And in its passenger configuration, it can carry 9 passengers. All of this. I mean, we could go all night on this because this is the kind of stuff that I sit around thinking about. Because, well, I sit around because I need things to sit around thinking about. But like, you know, every now and then, for some big celebration, the so-called tall ships will sail into New York Harbor or wherever.
Yeah.
But we've largely lost the technology required to build, say, a clipper ship, a flying cloud, or even a USS Constitution. It takes a lot of work to maintain the Constitution, and it is highly specialized carpentry, millwright work, textiles, you know, the canvas for the sheets. Oh, and here's a weird little thing that occurred to me the other day. You remember the Christopher Cross song Sailing?
Oh, yes.
You know that line, "Oh, the canvas can do miracles, just you wait and see."
Yeah.
Yeah. I always thought that was some sort of a mixed metaphor about painting. It isn't. The song is called Sailing, for fuck's sake.
Well, yeah, I mean, come on.
It's about, the canvas can do miracles is about the sheets, the sails on the boat. And sometimes I'm just, you know, had to wait. God, when did that come out? Came out when I was 16, so I waited 42 years for that revelation to strike. Son of a gun.
I wish I had a nickel for every time I played that song.
And I've got such a long way to go, such a long way to go. Yeah. Sorry, that's...
Mercy. Yeah, that's all right. That's Michael, right. I sang Glowworm.
Michael McDonald. Yeah, by the way, we still got Stephen New York's unnameable challenge on the $15, and that would... God, that would get us down to where we are, down to $8.60 for tomorrow. So if somebody wants to jump in with $15, that would be great. As ever, though, Scott, these conversations are magnificent. I think we learn most when we go wherever the winds of thought take us.
Sailing
takes me away.
I've been out of the loop because I think I told you I've been in my summer sleeping schedule, And I guess the only reason I'm awake right now is because I had to get out and pay the rent. I was late by about a week, but I have an understanding landlord. But anyway, I will try not to be as much of a stranger. I'll be a stranger as I've ever been, but I'll try to be not that much of a stranger. Do you get the distinction?
Yes.
Or am I just rambling at this point?
No, I get it. Yeah. It's like I'm a strange and wonderful relationship with Agnes. I'm strange and she's wonderful.
Well, I've always said that. Yeah. I've always said that. But anyway, Horn family, I hope our conversation didn't bring you down.
Oh, no, there'll be emails, and they will mostly be positive, except for the occasional crank.
See, when you lay it out, I didn't realize that I had it so right when I came up with my trademark expression, "We're all screwed, Robin," or in the old days, "We're all screwed, Bob," because it's not going to take that much for that to be a prophetic word. Say hallelujah and send me $100. You know, we're teetering.
Here's the good news. It's going to be hard to wipe us out as a species. Always has been. At one point in time, Homo sapiens was down to about 2,000 individuals. Okay? You, me, everybody listening to this program is kin to about 2,000 people way, 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 way back. And that was near extinction. But we made it out of it because we are clever and curious primates. I just got a note from Brother Deacon Asa saying, regarding 60,000 years versus 7,000 years, yes, the agrarian cultures were indeed more successful than us. Well, pre-agrarian, I think, is what he meant. Until the next extinction-level asteroid would have paid a visit. Well, we needed the space program and, by extension, the Industrial Revolution in order to hopefully deflect the next oncoming asteroid. The difference between us and the dinosaurs, as my beloved Bill Nye likes to say, is that the dinosaurs didn't have a space program. True enough.
Yeah, that is true.
Although I prefer to go back to a previous topic. Gary Larson's Far Side cartoon, real reason the dinosaurs died out. You ever see that one?
I think so, but refresh my memory.
Bunch of T-Rexes with their stubby little arms holding cigarettes up to their mouths.
Okay. Well, listen, I'll close on this upbeat note. If Earth ever gets to the point where there's only 2,000 of us upright and above ground, I hope that you and me and the rest of the Horn family, or a good chunk of them, are part of that number, because we might have hope, you know, the next time around.
Yeah, and please, God, if it gets down to 2,000, don't let any of them be libertarians, because then we're fucked.
No, we're fucked royally. No, thank you. Rand Paul, you're out of luck, Jasper. You're just out of fucking luck. Anyway, take care. Be happy. Stay cool if you're too warm, and stay warm if you're too cool.
And always, always, stay hip.
Oh, I got to be hip. Or hip.
Depends on where you're.
I'll be hip today. All right, man. I'm going to put my beret on, and you can tell me how hip I am.
Yeah, get the bongos.
Yeah, there. I've got them in the back room. I think you need to tune those.
Cool, man.
Oh, yeah. Groovy. Take care, Robin.
All right. See you, Scott. Have a good afternoon. Bye now.
You too. See ya.
The one and only Scott in San Diego. I love conversations like this. And the thing is, we only scratch the surface. Just the things we take for granted, the things we don't think about. Canning. You know, ball jars, that stuff that Roger in Oregon does so well. Canning comes along in, I think, the 1840s. That's wild. I thought about that first when I visited, and it's gone now, the ruin of a cabin that my great, great grandmother was born in. And it was full, the floor area. And I mean, I was very, very, I stepped very lightly and gingerly. Because it was all kind of giving way. But there was a room that was just filled with old ball and mason jars. And that was life. And they were reusable. And they had been saved there for future cleaning and boiling and canning. It's 1840. Before then, dinner was a very different affair. You know, going back to what Brother Deacon Asa said, is that you have to take into account the brilliance of hunter-gatherer societies, Europe or the Americas, because you know this planet's been getting whacked by various space garbage for a long time, and you know, then there's volcanoes and earthquakes. But the necessities of actually successfully living on this planet are fairly limited. You have to learn how to deal with the cold, and you have to learn how to feed yourself year-round. That's why you wind up with things like Stonehenge. Or in a more ornate form, the way that the shadow of the equinox makes the snake dance down the sides of the pyramid at Chichen Itza. Love this stuff. And it all means something in the larger scope of you know how we survive going forward. The world that you and I know and have grown up and lived in is going to be something approaching unrecognizable. Maybe as little as 2-3 generations out. My Kincaid ancestors came from a background of publishing, printing in Scotland. And within, I think, 2 generations of coming here, they had lost their literacy. Couldn't read and write. Because they had no idea how to live in the place that they were going. And there was no time left for sitting around fooling with that book larning. And trying to visualize what that world looks like 3 generations out. It can be terrifying. It can also be exciting. But that's for another day, and we'll continue. For now, thank you very kindly to Ralphs for meeting Joey and Giraffe's challenge. And thank you to Kevin in Massachusetts. Thank you for meeting Steve in New York's challenge. And I think we are at like, 875, something like that, for tomorrow, if anybody wants to jump in on the overnight crew. Thank you. Thanks to each and every one of you who, by being subscribers at Patreon or PayPal or being an a la carte contributor, keep this program on the air. You are the only reason it stays on the air. And we honor and appreciate you every day. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this long-running conversation in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you so much. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is always head on .live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. This would be a great time to reach out, and, you know, it has to do with climate change, too. Reach out to your member of Congress and probably get what could be the easiest win of the entire climate change process, and that would be to ask your member of Congress to sign on, co-sponsor, support H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AIC Act. It means the world to Appalachia, and by extension, to everybody else. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Remember, what was it, the 47-minute mark of the program this evening? Paul from Parts Unknown's dispatch. Social distancing, hand washing, it all matters. Thank you. And, you know, get your vaccine if you haven't already. If you know somebody that isn't vaccinated, urge them to get vaccinated. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Take it with you everywhere, pants pocket or purse, or European-style messenger bag. And 15 to 20 feet social distancing. Mask up. And, of course, if you run across somebody with a thing on their head saying, I'm not going to be bullied into showing a vaccine passport, I choose freedom, avoid that person like the plague. Because if we didn't already know, we certainly do now. He is. Later.